Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sesternino back here with another preview of one of the three tribes competing in Survivor 42. And today, what are we talking about? We're talking to you, Taku. Yes, we're going to try to shoehorn something and make it work. Yes, that's right. Six new Survivor contestants. They recorded interviews with the man who is at the center of the Survivor preseason. Give it up for the great correspondent from Parade.com, Mike Bloom.
Yeah, I was about to come in and be like, let's Taku a look at the Taku tribe, but you beat me to the punch,
no,
man.
No. It was a race to the bottom.
Yep, and we are just plumbing the depths. Mariana Trench, the Mariano Trench, has nothing on us at this point.
Hey, Mike, who are you talking about? Okay, let's get into everything. We did already one of these cast previews. We talked about the Ika tribe, and I think that was a lot of fun. We listened to six different recordings that Mike got from the Survivor 42 contestants while they were on location right before they went into the game. We will do the same for Jackson, Jonathan, Lindsay, Mariah, Marianne, and Omar here in this episode, where they will be the members of the Taku tribe.
Yes, they are members of the Orange Tribe, which, of course, is a bad harbinger. Although, I'll quote Jeff Probst from the 41 premiere. Someone from the David Tribe did win Survivor David versus Goliath. So maybe the curse has partially been broken. I'm not entirely sure. Because my hot take, Rob, again, if I'm putting out general takes before we even get into everything, I think if there is one tribe to be the Luvu of the season, it might be Taku,
Mike,
at this point.
Remind me, the Luvu of the season. It's been a minute since we had. So that's good. You think that this is they're going to dominate
for the first half of the season? Yes, mm-hmm. As we know, Luvu did not go to a tribal council. Even when some of them tried to go to tribal council, mm-hmm. It was not allowed to happen. I do know there's been some discourse about this in the Survivor fan community. That, with no offense to the other two tribes, I do think the more we get into this, there is, not to say that everyone is like big, beefy hunks of meat on this tribe, but I would say that everyone is in like fairly good condition that I could very easily see this tribe dominate, especially compared to the other two that seem a bit more all over the place.
Yeah, sometimes you could take a look at people and you could see that, okay, they're going to be physically dominate, but maybe other times it's like that they just work together really well.
Yeah, that could be the case, too, that, you know, obviously Luvu, again, going back to the example, had extremely physical people like a Danny, like a Sydney. But then you look at, you know, Erica certainly was no slouch in individual immunity challenges, but I think she was somebody who is someone on the smaller side physically. Heather, you know, one of the older people in the game. But you never know who ends up coming out in those challenges. So who knows? Taku might end up being the one on paper to really dominate and just completely fall apart. This season.
All right. Well, we will find out when the season kicks off. March 9th, we will have a 2-hour premiere of Survivor. So it is creeping up a couple of weeks away. We want to make sure you subscribe to Rob's podcast. Robiswebsite.com/subscribe. Of course, you will hear the third part of this series when Mike Bloom and I will be previewing the third tribe. What is it? Vati.
And I should also, I don't know if this is a correction or not. Justin Feinberg did respond to the first podcast we did and did note that there was another tribe in Fiji in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X that spelled their name IKI. And we, of course, Big Brother Canada fans are like, oh, the Ika tribe. This is incredible. Insert Ika Wong reference here. He did point out that tribe was called Ika Bula. So it might unfortunately be the Ika tribe instead of the Ika
tribe. Not as good.
Our heart breaks as reality TV fans. But when it comes to hearkening back to the culture of Fiji in which they're playing, absolutely understandable. It's okay. Just the crossover that we wanted to happen is not happening.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a little bit of a down note to start the podcast on, but we will move on. Let's talk about the first person alphabetically in this tribe, and that would be Jackson Fox.
Yes. So fun fact, this is actually, you know, much like Brighton Hand secretly came back as Russell's nephew. This is, I believe, the uncle of both Tasha Fox and Eddie Fox is returning to bring it home for the Foxes this time. Mm-hmm. What does the Fox say? We will soon find out.
Yes. Okay. The third survivor Fox from the the Fox family tree.
Yeah, but unfortunately not on the Fox network. It's a CBS show.
Right. Right. Okay. So, Mike, we know Jackson is 48, that he is a healthcare worker from Houston, originally from Pasadena, Texas. I didn't even know about Pasadena, Texas.
Yeah, this is this weird thing, right, where there are famous city names in other states like Miami, Ohio,
like
as
Paris,
an example.
Paris, Texas.
Texas is maybe the one that just likes to
it's
appropriate
very big, Mike.
Different city names. Yeah, we ran out of names. Let's go with New York City, Texas. I'm sure that'll work. But yeah, I mean, Jackson is someone who has a very unique origin story for getting into Survivor, as we are talking about. In terms of healthcare worker, it's a little bit of a generic title. In my interview, he goes into more specifics that he is a hospital transporter. Still not completely sure what that means, if that means like an EMT or if that means, but in
works
terms of
with
like
Scotty.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it as well. Yeah, put them in the buff in the transporter beam.
Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, I don't know if he's exactly a doctor, as you might think of when you hear of healthcare workers, but he has certainly been on the front lines. He certainly gets into that as well. And as a quick primer for those who, for some reason, may have just happened into the Taku tribe preview first before we did the
if you're just joining us, yes.
Exactly. We're Jeff Probst saying we got some pizza from Stu, that we'll have Stu to talk about later on here with one of these contestants. So these are audio interviews that I did with the contestants. I spliced in like my own questions that were asked by producers, but we're also referring to some more, I guess, extracurricular material outside of that, which includes my own interviews that I did with the contestants, at which point I believe this is coming out Wednesday, all of which with the Taku members should be up at parade.com. When you're listening to this, we'll also pull from their bios as well as from the 1 minute getting to know you videos that CBS has launched as well. So this will hopefully be a nice roundup of everything you need to know about these contestants.
Okay. All right. So why don't we kick things off with Jackson? Now, we are going to do our best to show restraint and not cut in a million times. But sometimes we have something that we have to say in the moment that we feel like is relevant
or hilarious. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like nobody came back to us last time saying too many butterflies. So like fingers crossed here. Mm-hmm. I guess if we're going along with the 41 beware phrases, is broccoli next then?
I like what you said about broccoli, Mike.
Exactly. There we go. Xander, he's the one who started listening during the Taku tribe because he knew that the broccoli one would be coming first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I think you really undersold the broccoli. All right. Here we go. Let's hear from Jackson Fox.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I think what brought me to Survivor was I applied 10 years ago, and out of the blue, they contacted me and wanted me to do it. And actually, it was probably the best time because 10 years ago, I wouldn't have done very well at all. And 10 years later, I've grown, and this is the perfect time to do
Survivor. And 12. And so I think that, what are we watching? Survivor One World.
Yeah, well, no, so he filmed in 2011, right? So it would be, it'd be 2011, so that would be right post
Redemption Island.
We have post Heroes versus Villains. He's like, you know what? I'm loving that Ralph guy. Rooster, he's the one, baby. He's bringing me on here. Now, listen, Jackson did say in his bio that he's an animal lover and a softie. So maybe a guy named Rooster was something that really gave him the one-way ticket onto Survivor. But yeah, listen, like, let this be a lesson out there to you. I'm being Jeff Probst. You're like, let this be for all you Survivor applicants out
there.
That's
how you do it.
You could apply a decade ago and then not touch it. And then they'll give you a call 10 years later and ask you to be on the show. You're never out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Back to Jackson.
What's your history with Survivor?
I actually started watching the show Survivor on a dare. I never watched reality TV. Wasn't anything that was in my wheelhouse. And someone dared me to watch it on Thursday. And I did. And at that point, I was hooked. Unfortunately, back then, we didn't have Netflix or things of that nature to watch past seasons. So I just had to start from there. And I've watched it every season since.
What's your favorite moment in Survivor history?
If I could share a favorite moment, honestly, it would be when Mike won. It was beyond touching. I think it touched everybody that watched it. It definitely touched me because I cared for my mother when she was sick. And it made everybody fall in love with the show, number one, because it can bring so many different people together. But I think it just brings everyone together that watches it. You have such a love for it.
Broccoli.
Okay, so I'm going to do a little bit of clarification here. Because I also asked Jackson, you know, what winner and non-winner are you most like? And he also mentioned Mike. There may be a slight mix up here, a little bit of nominal aphasia on Jackson's part when it comes to the person that he is referencing, because I do believe he's actually implying Adam Klein rather than Mike Holloway.
Wait, how do you know?
So let me go into my interview with him where I said, again, give me one Survivor winner and one non-winner.
I mean, Mike's mom did come right at the end.
Right, but in my interview with him,
Mike is from Texas.
Yes, but he said that Mike, quote unquote, had such a passion for playing the game. He got a lot of flack because he did flip and flop and move around.
Okay.
But he stuck to his core. He had such a love for it, especially between him and his mother. That was beyond touching. And I think he deserved that win beyond anybody, even though Ken did a great job.
Is it possible that maybe that the nominal affairs between like Ken and like Will Sims?
Oh, yeah. I really like, you can mistake them in a lineup for each other. Absolutely. Frequently mistaken. Ken McNichol and Will Sims II.
Okay.
Like the movie Twins.
Look, there's a lot of Survivor, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, I just wanted to clarify
that. He's going to be thrilled when he hears this.
Maybe just don't listen to the past like few minutes, Mike. You just live in that fantasy, in your French vanilla fantasy that you were the one being referenced here, which I totally agree. I was riding that train initially of makes a lot of sense. Someone who's also close with their mother, someone from Texas, right? Like Jackson sort of has that blue collar role, much like Mike did. But yeah, I think there are some context clues that make Bean believe. I don't know. It might have also been that like the producer gave my name before the interview. So the name Mike just kind of got stuck in his head as well.
Maybe.
He does not refer to anybody else as Mike. It's not just like the name Mike is a pronoun that he uses for everything in this. Because he does also say that Suri is his favorite
Mike
non-winner. Though I think he also refers to her as Cece in the interview too. So Jackson might have
a little bit. Yeah, look.
I mean, this will be
a lot going on. A lot going on location. Yeah,
this will be interesting though. If you know, someone says, "Hey, my name is Jonathan," he's like, "All right, Juju, I'm writing your name down."
No, wow, I like that. Everybody's Mike.
Yeah, that's true. Like, all right, Mike. Mm-hmm. Then we're gonna have to have a bye-bye Denver Diva moment, right? Where Jeff's like, "Who is this? Mike's on the other tribe in this season."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also maybe Jackson is like staring right at the mic, and then it's just like sort of like just pops into his head.
Are you like Brick Tamlin situation? Are you just looking around the room and naming things?
Okay. All right. Back to Jackson.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
I can pick one life experience that helped me with Survivor would be transitioning. I'm a transgendered man that transitioned later in life. I transitioned at 40. And that's not an easy thing to do when you come from a Southern Baptist home. But I think if I can go through that kind of a transition, then I can definitely do Survivor.
Between the pandemic and lockdowns, how has the past year changed the way you view this experience?
I think viewing this experience of Survivor during COVID, it's taught me to take life as it comes to you and not miss an opportunity. Life can end so quickly, and especially in my world in healthcare, it's on a dime, it can change. And I think if you don't take an advantage when it comes to you and a life experience, you're just going to miss out.
What's something that other players might dislike about you?
I think other players could dislike the fact that I'm likable. That's always a disadvantage in this game because they don't ever want to take you to the end because they're afraid that everyone will vote for you. But I think in a way it helps me because it makes everyone think they can be aligned with me.
Broccoli. Yeah. So there is a lot to talk about in that little chunk. So I guess let's start with the first thing that he mentioned. And I do believe he is the first openly transgender man to compete on Survivor. Obviously, I do not want to bring back the situation that prompted, you know, the first transgender contestant to be outed on the show. But Jackson himself, you know, even says very curtly in his bio, what's something we would never know from looking at you? I used to be a girl. Mm-hmm. And so Jackson is not only someone who's very open with his past, he's someone who is even chalking it up to something that may help him in the game as well. Just this idea of, and he talks about this in his 1 minute video as well, right? The idea of like completely reinventing and readjusting yourself that obviously puts you in a more comfortable setting than where you were prior, but still that's a lot of upheaval to, you know, everything you had lived in your life up to that point.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just something that's really fun to note from Jackson as well. Also really interesting that he transitioned relatively later in life as well. He transitioned only 8 years ago. So I would imagine that, you know, having lived a certain life up to that point and then again transitioning and then living this other existence, you know, as Jackson, I think is very intriguing as well. Again, I'm not entirely sure how it translates to the game of Survivor, but it's an awesome story for Jackson to hear. And I hope he's able to share it more on screen as well because of that idea of representation. The main thing I want to talk about from this chunk is what would people dislike about you? They'll dislike the fact that I'm too likable.
Too
Rob, is this like it? Is this a job interview-esque answer of like my only weakness is that I have no weaknesses?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it definitely is a thing where, you know, people are like, oh, I got to take out this person because they are too likable. But a little bit more of the job interview answer here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jackson is somebody who really talks up this idea of like Southern hospitality and charm that he is able to bring. And so I think, you know, he does in his bio compare himself to Elaine, and that was certainly a problem, sure. Right? Like I was there from at the first vote in Survivor 39, and there was already talk about taking out Elaine at that moment because she was going to be too threatening for the end. And so I do wonder with the hyper-focused game and hyper, you know, squeezed in game of a 26-day season, could that be a legitimate piece of criteria that people would want to use in even the pre-merge of this is somebody we don't want to take to the end, let's clip him now?
Okay, let's get back to more with Jackson.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
Best advice I received coming out here was be yourself and have fun. That's the name of the game. This is an adventure. Got to have fun doing it or you're going to miss out on what the adventure really is.
How are you personally different after a year of lockdown?
After a year of lockdown, I would say that I'm definitely more outgoing than I was before. That it makes you want to reach out to people, especially family. Like I said, life is short and it can end quickly. And I've learned to appreciate the people in my life a lot more. Yes.
When you're at your lowest moment in the game, what's one happy memory you'll pull from in your time of need?
It's a little cheesy, but like I said before, I come from a very small southern town, and being different is not viewed as a positive thing. And when I finally got to tell my mother who I was and that I was actually happy and she accepted me for who I was, that was probably a memory I will hold.
Okay. There is Jackson.
Yeah, relatively short and sweeter interview compared to others with Jackson. But I think that also speaks to who he is. You know, despite living a complicated life, he seems like a very relatively simple, straightforward guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's coming in. He even admits himself that like he's a little bit more of a fly on the wall in the beginning. So he might be a bit quieter to begin with. But once he really opens up and he's able to engage with people, you know, then he's going to become somebody that he feels is going to be feared in this game.
Mike, I see in Jackson's bio, he says that he is a collector of hurt or abandoned animals. Do we have any sort of stats or numbers on the menagerie that Jackson might have?
I mean, I have not perused any sort of, black market vet clinic that Jackson might be running. I mean, that being said, there may be somebody on his tribe that he can bond with over that certain thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Because a collector of animals sounds like, what do you think? What's the over-under? Like a dozen?
Yeah, I guess collector is interesting, right? Because this seems more so like, well, I'll take you in and house you, as opposed to like, oh no, this baby bird fell out of its nest. Like, let me, you know, nurse it for a little while and then set it free. Sounds more so like Jackson kind of lives with all of these animals that he has collected along the way, created his own like animalistic boarding house.
So yeah, hopefully we get to hear more about that.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, Jackson is, I will admit, I think he's a little bit more of an X factor to me. Again, just given, I think, to the relatively lack of information in his bio and in his interviews compared to the others who gave, I mean, we'll talk about one of his other tribe members, which gave a lot by comparison. You know, it's tough for me to put my finger on the pulse of Jackson. I could very easily see him having a tough time early on, or like for whatever reason, if he's not connecting, especially in a tribe of six, if they do end up going to tribal council, I could see him getting clipped if he hasn't really found that person that he's getting in with.
Right.
But that being said, he doesn't necessarily stick out early on. And if it's a case where people are gunning for others based on things that they're seeing, if you're not seeing, that may help you.
To me, I feel like that Jackson is giving me like Genie vibes from last season, where in talking with Shan and Ricard, they were both like, you know, Genie is like the nicest person ever, but could not lie. You know, we couldn't tell Genie anything because that Genie would just have to tell them. And I just feel like that Jackson has such a big heart. Seems like, you know, the sweetest guy ever. I don't know if necessarily he is going to be, you know, cutthroat and, you know, keeping secrets from the other people. And I think that that makes him tough to work with as an ally.
That is a great point. So let's talk about that a bit. When I asked him, what do you desire in an alliance partner? He said three things: loyalty, transparency, and
honesty.
And then, you know, going into his 1 minute video, he basically talked about how he wanted to play honorably. And not to say that the game of Survivor is not without this idea of honor and integrity, as much as we might sort of like roll our eyes when people mention it. Like, you do want to inherently try to trust and feel good with somebody out there. But I don't know if coming in with that attitude and like basing your strategy on it may have flown 10 years ago when he first applied. I don't know if it's flying as much like those baby birds that he's probably nursing in 2022.
Okay. All right. Like, anything else on Jackson?
No, I think it, to your point, I could see Jackson be like a late pre-merge boot, perhaps maybe when Taku ends up going. But Jackson seems like a really cool guy. So I'm excited to hopefully see more of him. The Genie comparison is really interesting as well. And that, like, Genie herself had a really interesting story that when we got to see it, I think was really great. And she seemed like a really cool person to hang around with as well.
All right, let's talk about Jonathan. Mike, what do we know about Jonathan Young?
So Jonathan Young is fairly young. He's 29, from another Southern guy, Gulf Shores, Alabama. He is the owner of his own beach service company, which he has been in charge of for seemingly a decade. And as I mentioned during our kickoff special last week, this is not the first time we have seen Jonathan Young on our TV screens on reality TV. 15 years ago, at the age of 14, Jonathan Young was on a show called Endurance.
Yes. Okay. So, Mike, were you an endurance guy?
Did you watch everything? I was an endurance guy. Yeah. I'd say I watched the first few seasons when it first came out, because I was suckered in by the whole, like, you know, Survivor-like spectacle of it. I explained it on the kickoff special. It's not terribly like Survivor. They are living sort of like in remote, quote unquote, wilderness, but like, there are, you know, bungalows they stay in. They play in teams of two, one man, one woman. They compete in like a challenge every episode. And then two teams get sent to like an elimination where essentially they play rock, paper, scissors between fire, water, and wood to essentially earn pieces of the pyramid that they then use it like in like a big game of strategy at the end when there's just two teams left. I watched the first few seasons.
Yeah, wait, hold on. So I naturally, because water beats fire, right?
Of course.
Fire
of course,
beats wood.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wood beats wood, water.
wood floats on water, as said by host J.D. Roth, and that's how it defeats it.
By floating on it. I guess also, listen, you know, you can put, have a bucket.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a Pokemon kid, you know? I've been used to this triangle for a while now. I've been raised on it, so I'm going to believe it no matter how illogical it may be. But, I mean, Endurance has produced some reality
and of course,
TV
you know,
success.
You could see why they would do that, because like they can't get the rights to Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Exactly. So they're like, all right, what are three other things? And they got two. Two really worked out. And then they said, oh, we'll throw some wood in there, quite literally. Grab a piece of the set and throw it in there. It's just an effing stick. So yeah. There is some, a little bit of a path of reality TV success from Endurance contestants. John A. Mannion was the winner of the very first season of Endurance, made a big name for herself on The Real World, and more recently The Challenge, where she was the most recent winner of The Challenge All-Stars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Jonathan has, they're smaller footprints. This is not a huge path, but we'll see if Jonathan follows in them here. But he is someone who essentially he's going to describe, as soon as he got off Endurance when he was 14 years old, wanted to be on Survivor. And so now, years and years later, he is finally doing so. And Jonathan has an interesting personality. We'll talk about it, especially with his bio. He has some very humorous bio answers.
Okay, let's hear from Jonathan.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I'm here on Survivor because this is one of my dreams. Since I was 14 years old, I've had a longing to be out in the game of Survivor, surviving, experiencing. And yeah.
What's your history with Survivor?
The reason it started when I was 14 was because I was on a TV show called Endurance, which is like Survivor for kids. And this show was basically a dumbed down version of this show. You couldn't starve us because we were just kids, but I got a taste of what Survivor would be like. And I immediately, when I got home, was like, I want to do Survivor. I want to do the real thing. I want to see how hard it is. I want the challenge.
Broccoli.
The challenge?
Yeah, I mean, that might be the next step. Again, just like take the John A. path. So, yeah, I do love Jonathan's like super simple description of like a dumbed down version of Survivor was Endurance. They couldn't starve us because we were kids. Let me introduce you to a show called Kid Nation, Jonathan. Wasn't the host called Jonathan there as well?
I believe so. Yeah, boy. Jonathan is like the master of like the pregnant pause also.
Yeah, absolutely. But he also has this like, I don't know, very stern, like kind of low southern voice as well that like makes you kind of want to lean in and listen. One of my hot takes is I think Jonathan, no matter how long he lasts, is going to be somebody they go to for confessionals. I think based on his archetype, which we'll certainly get into, and also just due to the fact of like it's the Xander effect, right? It's like that really alluring voice in
a
way.
What you said about my voice.
Yeah, exactly. Like just add a little bit of southern lilt to that, and Rob, you basically have your Jonathan impression.
Yeah. Oh. Mike, finally. Okay. All right, let's go back to Jonathan.
What's your favorite moment in Survivor history?
I think a cool moment in Survivor history was when the Tribal Council, I think it was season 33, when two idols were played and rocks had to be drawn and everything was going crazy. It was the craziest tribal I've ever seen. And I loved how wild it got. I love any part in Survivor where it just gets totally chaotic. I'm a fan of.
Broccoli. Just from a fact-checking perspective, I believe one idol is played, right?
Yeah, I believe that's the one that David played for Ken.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if our own Jessica Lewis thinks that that's such an awesome tribal council.
Yeah, but that being said, this really hones in on what Jonathan wants to do. And he'll talk a bit about like the provider aspect, but at the end of the day, the dude wants chaos. He essentially wants to be able to just cause as much chaos as he possibly can. He's going to get into
kind
as
of
much
against
trouble.
Type, no?
Well, that's, I think, the thing is that he really wants to play into the Aussie role, right? He says in both his bio and in my interview with him that Aussie is someone that he compares himself to the most. he says in his minute long video that he spends basically every day spearfishing. So I think he's really going to play up this like meathead fisher boy persona. Yeah. But I think on the back end, like he wants to just really cause havoc. Now, I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if this is like hiding fake idols or dumping rice in the fire if we're getting to like that level of chaos, or if it's just like, you know, standing up and whispering at tribal council. But it's very interesting to see someone both play into his perception and then using that perception to do whatever he wants to.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to Jonathan.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
Yeah. So the front end, everybody's going to see a guy that wants to serve. I want to help. I want to do what I can to provide for my tribe. Going into it, I know that I'm going to be the bigger player. I know that everybody's going to think I'm a physical threat. It's obvious. I have to use that. And the only way that I can use it is go, hey, I'll use it to help you. It's not just, this isn't just for me. It's for us. We're a tribe. We're a tribe. We're sticking together, sticking together. Anything that I can use, I'm going to use it. But on the back end is the chaos. I didn't come here to change everybody's diapers. I came here to change the game. And the cool part of this is I'm going to cause every bit of trouble that I can if I think it'll help me get further in the game. I'm not going to be scared. I'm not going to leave the game going, oh, I wish I would have done this. Oh, I wish I would have done that. Man, I want no regrets. I want to leave on empty.
What?
Broccoli.
Interesting that you said he's the master of pregnant pauses and he talks about not wanting to change diapers out there.
Yeah. I didn't come here to change everybody's diapers. I came here to change the game. That could be one of the beware advantage phrases.
You know, Jeff, everyone's just we had some bad papaya the other day, and I'm not here to change diapers.
I'm here to change everybody's diapers.
I mean, thank God. Otherwise, I would not be covering Survivor the way that I did if changing diapers was a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. let's go back to Jonathan.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
So my lifestyle, since I was young, I've been raised on the beach. I make my money off the beach, been raised on the beach. I've trained pretty much for this moment. You know, I spearfish all the time. I've swam at the University of Alabama. And once I knew that I was getting on Survivor, I changed the way that I worked out everything. I changed to morph it around the game. Anything that I can do, anything that I could have done, I did, because I want to leave all my chips on the table. So yeah, my lifestyle is going to be very adaptable to the game of Survivor. I think that's going to help me a lot.
Between the pandemic and lockdowns, how has the past year changed the way you view this experience?
Yeah, the pandemic, you know, that was very hard for everybody. And I know the lockdowns and everything, it definitely affected people mentally. But yeah, I feel a lot more blessed. I feel more blessed when I get the opportunity to do something like this. I feel more, I'm thankful. I'm more thankful for the opportunities, because now once something's been taken away, like freedoms and your right to do stuff, once that's been taken away,
oh boy,
you realize what you have. You don't know what you have till it's gone. And so not being able to play last year, because they chose me for last year's season. They said, you're getting ready to go. And 5 days out, they cut the cast, they cut Survivor off, said we can't do it because of the pandemic. So for me, the freedom to be able to do this stuff again is enlightening. It feels great.
What's something that other players might dislike about you?
Preconceived ideas, because a lot of big guys, I think that what they wouldn't like about me is just some sort of idea that they put in their head from being around me and not being able to talk to me. And because I am bigger and I look the way I do, it could be that they were intimidated. But the truth is, once they get to know me, there's nothing to be intimidated about. I want to be everybody's friend. I love people, and I want to help my tribe go to the top. And once they know that, and they know that I'm genuine, then there's nothing that's going to make him dislike me.
Broccoli. Yeah. So let's talk about this. Okay. Let's gawk a bit at Jonathan.
Sure.
Cause I do think he sticks out a bit. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this right during the kickoff a smidge about how I do feel like compared to some of the more Mactory days of, you know, the teens or even, you know, the early 20s back when Jackson was applying, right? It seems like everyone looks relatively more normal. Jonathan might be the one who sticks out there because, like, if you look at his picture, like, he is just ripped. In his bio, he talks about how one of his pet peeves is wearing shirts. So I do think he kind of, like, sticks out in that regard. It seems like he is, you know, from a visual perspective, probably the most physical male out there. That does make me wonder either will that work out for him or will it make
works
him stick out
all
out
the time?
I mean, exactly. Or will it make him stick out too much to this point of like there's nobody else from a physical perspective to compare him to?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think we have seen players be able to make it work for them. I mean, look at Danny last season, who I think that we probably presumed would be a target because of him being a professional athlete and looking like that he was like the most physically fit out of anybody and seemed to never really even come up. You know, it was like he got voted out at the end of the game because he seemed like he was more of a social threat to win the game. So I think you can make it work for you, but you know, I am not seeing Jonathan. I have to bring up the cast photo to just see how much bigger Jonathan is than everybody else in comparison.
Oh yeah, we have to look at the cast photo. I mean, Jonathan also has a fantastic pose in general. When he's standing there with his like hands up, his arms wide open to be like, "Give me a hug." Is really what Jonathan is saying. And if he talks about coming from like a you know a lifetime of service and wanting to provide for the tribe, I guess that's the vibe that you want to give off, even in your cast photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see that he broke the Guinness Book of World Record for most pull-ups with 100 pounds attached to him.
Yeah, I wonder, was there a record before that? Or is this one of these Guinness Book of World Records of like, all right, let me find the most unique niche that I can fill and end up doing it? And because in that case, he might have the record at like 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Does he have like a headdress on? Is this does he have beads in his hair?
Yeah, I think this is like the beach lifestyle, man. I told you, like he said he's raised on the beach and I feel like he is a son of a beach. And I feel like he's got like the dreads going on. I compared it to the Grant Matos look beforehand. I think this is his natural hair from everything I've seen of him.
Okay. He looks like he also has like the hidden immunity idol already. Do you know what that emblem is?
No. So it looks almost like a feather or like a talon. I don't know. Maybe Jackson gave it to him after like, he found an eagle or something. But yeah, he has a cross around his neck. He talks a lot in my conversation with him about like how important his faith is, which may be a big connector with someone else that we are talking about on this tribe, interestingly enough. But yeah, I'm not sure what that other one is. This might be like a sea bass, you know, like, it's like a natural totem that I like to wear.
We'll find out. Yeah.
Well, we shall see. He's coming in with bling, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to Jonathan.
How are you personally different after a year of lockdown?
There's not a lot of control that anyone has of what happens to them. We have control of how we take it and the attitude that we have, but we don't, as people, control what happens to us. And, you know, that was humbling for me because I've always wanted to be in control. I want to have a certain schedule and do it my way. But, you know, it was like the good Lord just said, you know, hold up to everybody in the whole world. It's not just the country. It's not a city. It's not a state. It's one, the whole world. It's humbling. And, you know, God put a hold on that and goes, hey, I'm in control. So I think that's what it taught me is that, you know, we're more along for the ride and be ready for anything.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
Yeah, the best piece of advice was don't be comfortable. Do not get comfortable. And that sit with me for over a year. Mr. Matt actually told me that, the producer. And somebody here told me, they said, it's like a poker game. Survivor is like a poker game. You can't predict the cards that other the people are going to get dealt. You don't know the cards you're going to get dealt. It's a new game every time. You can't watch these old seasons and think that you have it all figured out. You have to be ready for anything because it's never the same.
Okay, that's Jackson. Yeah. New nickname for Matt Van Wagenen, Mr. Matt. He sounds like a kindergarten teacher.
Well, I think it's very much like, again, that Southern thing, right? Like, I know, I remember Sydney back from Co Wrong, right? Used to say like Mr. Joe, Miss Debbie. So I do think it's that sort of sense of hospitality in a manner of speaking. But yeah, when you
I was hoping he said Mr. Matt.
when AJ Mash came and told me how to play the game of Survivor. Yeah, this is interesting because when you ask the question, you know, what's the best piece of advice someone gave you? You'd imagine it's like someone from your life, not one of the producers of Survivor.
Well, he would know. I would take advice from Mr. Matt before just like some rando that doesn't even watch Survivor.
Yeah, but I love this idea, too. I mean, Jackson, as he alluded to, was much like we talked about with Deshaun and Erica, right? Like, seemed to be part of this fabled cast of Survivor 41 that was about to play in April of 2020 before everything happened.
Oh, we might have to brand steal that at some point, Mike.
Oh my God, exactly. So yeah, so when Mr. Matt told him that, like he sat on that information for a year. And I do think that is something that he is really going to carry into the game. Do not get comfortable.
That's why Akiva, don't lay down and do a podcast. You're not going to be at your best.
Though I do wonder, Jonathan's raised on the beach, so I do feel like he actually might be physically the most comfortable out there. Speaking of physical, something we should mention from his minute-long video, Rob, bold declaration. Listen, he is a record breaker. He is making the claim right now. He wants to be the record holder for most individual immunity challenge wins.
Okay, what's his record, 5 or 6 at this point?
Record is 5 right now.
5.
So he's got a lot to do.
People have it, right?
Yeah, a good amount. So listen, he can join that rarefied air, but he wants to beat them. He wants to be the new Mike Holloway or Adam Klein.
That in the 26-day game, I think you kind of got to run the table.
I'm trying to remember how many individual immunity challenges if they merge at 12 and they don't do the whole hourglass thing, he's going to have what, 8 opportunities.
And you got to hope that they don't do like, okay, we're going to have like one challenge and then we're going to split you into 2 groups. So, you know, I think there's only probably like 7 or 8 individual immunity challenges in the season.
So he can't miss that much. He's going to have to hit basically every time. So best of luck. Something we should also mention here, Rob, and it was something that, of course, the great Evie Jagoda tagged you on in Twitter. Mm-hmm. In his minute-long video, Jonathan essentially compared his personality to a stew.
Mm-hmm.
Said that's a stew of Southern, a little bit of Southern hospitality, a little bit of strength, and a lot of service to the team. And so I know we have your winner pick already.
You totally undersold the stew.
So the question is, how are we selling on Jonathan here? Because again, he has someone who has a lot of, you know, trappings of someone that we might compare to an Aussie or a Joey Amazing. He certainly did in his bio and in his interviews. Do we think he's going to fall into that same demo as well? Because that demo has yet to really win since Mike Holloway.
So the way that my mind works with trying to figure this out, I'm always trying to figure out like, okay, especially in a small group like this, I think you get a little bit of a sense of like, okay, who's the leader? Who do they work with? Like, who are they following? Who are they going to have friction with? So I'm not seeing Jackson as the leader of the tribe. Jonathan, I feel like did he talk about leading the group?
He more so said, like, use me, to quote Hannah Shapiro. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm someone who's a provider. I can be used as a camp asset. I'm just working to help in the challenges. It might be, you know, this oftentimes just happens of, like, the tallest, biggest person is looked to as the leader in the challenges. That may happen, especially if Jonathan is good at them. I'm not sure how that's going to translate, though, to a leader in terms of strategy, because I don't think he'd want to be a leader in strategy.
I almost hear from, like, in his worldview, I know he talks about, like, service to the team, but I feel like it seems like that he sounds, like, very, like, individually, like, focused, and which I don't mind in a Survivor player. I feel like that he is looking at, like, okay, use me, don't vote me out in the team portion of the game so I can get to the individual portion of the game, cause chaos, and win individual challenges.
Right. And maybe it's this idea of the reason why he also wants to cause chaos is the whole don't get comfortable thing. But also if he feels like he's already essentially manifested safety for himself by winning every single individual immunity challenge, mm-hmm. he's like, then I'm just playing with house money.
Yeah.
At that point,
keep me around to help you win. I'll feed you and then I will create chaos and win all the challenges and I'll get to the end.
Now, again, we spoke about this a bit in the kickoff that the whole provider thing is certainly can be useful. But, you know, we saw with the Luvu tribe that someone like Nasir still got in a bit of hot water early on for kind of doing what Jonathan was doing, right? Like, yes, he was a provider, but it was also kind of causing chaos. He was going around trying to throw people under the bus, and then that information was circulating back because it's a small group. I could see Jonathan get in a surprising bit of trouble in the pre-merge. I don't know if that's going to correspond with him getting booted pre-merge, but I could see him draw some unwanted attention to himself if, like, he starts just stirring the pot of stew,
as it were,
and people are like, oh, John, the guy who's going out fishing is, like, throwing my name under the bus? Well, we don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, you got to be careful. And, you know, and that's the thing about him being like such a big target. It's easy to sort of like be able to, you know, stir the pot if, say, you're, you know, Erica in season 41, as opposed to, you know, if you're Jonathan and you have, a lot more attention already on you.
All right. Well, I want to go to his bio here, Rob, because this was something that was a big takeaway. A lot of people looked at this. Who is your hero and why? Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. He is a man of God, my physical and spiritual mentor through some of the hardest times in my life. Now, I am a pleb when it comes to the world of wrestling. How weird of a choice is this to say your hero in life is Lex Luger?
Yeah. Okay. Now, I don't know a ton about Lex Luger other than, I do remember him being in the WWE in the 1990s. Pretty awesome mullet. Look like definitely did not shy away from maybe the performance dancing substances.
Okay.
I don't really remember what his gimmick was.
Maybe the gimmick was that. No, I guess
he was bigger in WCW and I was more of a WWF person.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say if the hair was the thing, but I know Hulk Hogan also sort of had the mullet going on as well. So mm-hmm. he was sort of a dime a dozen there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Seems like he was a part of the group called the Four Horsemen.
Bringing
that back. They are in Fiji, so maybe that could be something he tries to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess his gimmick in the WWF, he was the narcissist.
Oh, okay. Where's Angie Kontz?
Yeah. Okay. So, again, you said you learned the game from Mr. Matt. I believe that is one of the archetypes.
Right? I was going to say, yeah. I was mixing up my archetypes. So it looks like he was part of an alliance to end Hulkamania, interestingly enough.
He was bigger in WCW than he was in WWF. So I was much more of a WWF guy.
Yeah, there's also, he had a feud with NWO as well. So Lex Luger is not one to sort of shy away, I would say, from making a big presence of himself. Just an interesting pull, especially for a 29-year-old guy to pull from Lex Luger of wrestlers. I might have to check in with Matt and Mari about how WTF or WCW is that.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to make a Four Horsemen alliance?
I mean, he possibly could. Or if his inspiration is a wrestler, could we see the next coming of John Hennigan here?
In what way?
I don't know, the mayor of Beachtown. I don't know if he's like, let me play like a wrestler does. Yeah.
I don't really know what John Hennigan's like claim to Survivor fame is.
I mean, unfortunately, I think his biggest claim is probably the way he went out, mm-hmm. other than like the brochachos
mm-hmm.
of it all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else about Jonathan?
No, I mean, we'll talk at the end, right, about like who's going to connect with who. But I would say, I think for those of us that may look at Jonathan and just expect him to be like generic, you know, fishing bro number 42, I think there's more to him than that in many ways. And that might either be good or bad for his game.
Yeah. All right. We have talked about two members of the Taku tribe. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking about the return of a survivor, Lindsay, right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
All right, Mike, let's get back into it, talking about Lindsay Dolaswitch.
The Nintendo Dolaswitch. Dolaswitch, I believe.
Dolaswitch
is her last name there. Yes, so Lindsay is a dietitian from New Jersey. Lindsay's not having a sterling track record in Survivor. Let's see if she can buck that trend.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's been a minute. I think we had back-to-back Lindsay's in seasons, or not back-to-back, 28 and 30.
Yes, neither of which did particularly well. Of course, we know what happened to Lindsay Ogle, mm-hmm. Her name etched in the sand and in our memories. And of course, Lindsay Kaskadian, I believe it's her last name, and from Survivor.
Lindsay Richter.
Lindsay Richter as well. Oh, yeah. All the way back in those days. Lindsay's have all gone out pre-merge in Survivor. Can you reverse the Lindsay curse?
Reverse the curse. Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us about Lindsay D?
Lindsay D will give a lot of intel as to herself. She is quite a talker, self-professed as well. So I will let her explain herself fully here.
Okay. All right. Here is Lindsay coming up here. Let's see what she has to say.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I was always planning on being on Survivor. I started watching since I was a kid. I was like around 10. And it was always just a matter of when did I have the time available to take 2 months off to join. So it was every year I'd watch and I was like, man, I really hope that they're going to do another season. I really hope it's not gone by the time I'm here because it's been like 20 years. And so finally, once I started my business, I was like, oh, hell yeah. Now I totally can take time off. I'm my own boss. So that's when I started applying. But everything about the game is who I am. I mean, minus the survival skills, as ironic as that sounds, but in terms of being super competitive, that's me. Very athletic, very me. Very social, very me. Also really strategic and being able to kind of manipulate people in a way, not in a, like in a negative way, but I'm capable of doing it. So in all those aspects all together, I was like, this game is me. And in no other way can I utilize these strengths that I have in a productive manner in real life. But on Survivor, it could be super productive. So it just screamed me. So the second I saw the show, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I'm definitely going to try this.
Broccoli. Yeah. Okay. So Lindsay finally is able to get out here and be on Survivor. I mean, that is so true what she says. You know, you never are going to have more free time to pursue your passions than right after you start your own business. I mean, that is, you just have a lot of, you really is going to free up a lot of your time.
Absolutely. You're going to be whiling away in the hammock all day, just, you know, counting the dollars. So we should mention here. So Lindsay is part owner of her own business. Absolute Nutrition is the name of it. I'm on the website right now and it brands itself as, quote, no bullshit nutrition.
Right. You know,
so good. I'm
so tired of regular BS nutrition.
Yeah, exactly. Like, listen, I'm tired of eating BS, so I'm happy. My mouth stinks at this point, so I'm happy to be eating cleaner. But yeah, this is they're located in like five different places in New Jersey. Maybe I'll try to do like my own undercover work.
Yeah,
I might. Maybe I'll go check out an Absolute Nutrition place. I'm sure. Listen, yeah. I could certainly use the upgrade, especially during the Survivor preseason.
Yeah,
I have.
Hey, look, don't forget
bullshit.
You still got to race Puya, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that's if I specifically come in like Lindsay, I need to outrace this one guy. You got to help me here, please.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Lindsay.
What's your favorite moment in Survivor history?
As controversial as this sounds, one of my favorite moments in Survivor honestly has to be a lot about season 39. There was a lot of controversial things that came up in terms of the do-rag comment and the sexual harassment things. But I loved watching that because I really loved the way that the cast spoke about it, the way that they handled it, the way that it really opened up people's eyes to see things that are going on for people who might not understand or know or be aware of. And as I'm watching it, I said to my mom, I was like, I'm so happy this is on right now. Like during those tribal councils, like this is just so great. Like millions of people are watching this and it's just so over, like it's just been over time. This needed to be done so long ago, but I mean, you know how times go, but it was, I love that. That was really great for me to see. And I really hope a lot of people took a lot of positive things from that.
Broccoli. Wow. Mike, maybe the hottest take of them all is not that Survivor 39 is the 40th best season of Survivor. What if it is actually the best season of Survivor?
I mean, listen, Lindsay is someone who struck out on her own mm-hmm. to start her own business. No bullshit nutrition, no bullshit Survivor mm-hmm. opinions either, mm-hmm. according to Lindsay.
Yeah,
I mean, let's to each their own.
What if we had it totally upside down?
Oh, like the Mon Juan hat. You just turn it up.
Take the Velcro off, flip it around. The best season of Survivor.
People were certainly saying wow in response to season 39. So mm-hmm. let me completely deviate from this and talk about Lindsay's family for a second. So she watched it with her mom. She tells a really funny story in my interview with her where her dad is totally one of those non-fans. She says, my dad would always walk past the TV and we're like, oh, dad, do you want to watch this episode? It's really good. Probably an episode of season 39. And he's like, oh, that's all drama. It's all fake. Now, when I told my dad, I'm going to be on it. Do you think it's all drama? He's like, no, I mean, they plant coconut trees and make you dig for buried treasure. I'll just wait till you're on it. So for some reason, despite his own daughter being on the show, he's still firmly in the camp of this show is fake. They plant coconut trees for you to dig things up.
Well, I think that is like one of the, you know, Survivor secrets, I think, that has been exposed pretty heavily, of that the producers will often to make it easier that they will plant coconut trees just all over Fiji, just, you know, bring them in. And they are just planting fully grown mature trees everywhere.
Yeah, and that's actually what they're using Ty for, right? Like, they have him on the payroll, and he's a gardener, so they're like, all right, let's bring you in. You know what to do. Let's
get
ship
the
him
crane.
In.
Put that tree up.
Yeah, you joke about it, but considering the fact that we are now in, what, our sixth year, we are encroaching on 10 seasons in Fiji, like, they actually might have legitimately planted a seed during Millennials versus Gen X that could have fully matured a la Ghost Island into a coconut tree.
Interesting. So they seeded the island with coconut seeds, and that's why they can't leave Fiji.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is our investment. We literally planted our... Yeah, it's called a probe seed. Mm-hmm. But it's in the foam of a coconut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Lindsay.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
So as a registered dietitian, you think it's just teaching people nutrition, you know, get in my door, here's what you do, and you leave. But it's a lot of nutrition counseling. So there's a lot of the counseling aspect where you really need to dig deep about what are people's motivations, what's holding them back from doing things, what are kind of some of their fears. And within that, I ended up working with the eating disorder demographic as well, which not only has made me a better dietitian, to be perfectly honest, but in terms of just the mental health aspect, the way people think, the different things that might end up being related in different ways, and how to approach different people and get them to open up, I think ultimately has prepared me that I feel the most prepared I would ever be to play now, just by knowing how to adapt with different types of people. Everyone is different who I work with, and I have to build a rapport with them. I have to get them to open up. I have to get them to be willing to try something different and take a risk. And hopefully those skills are going to relate into this game, that I can get people to also open up and trust me and want to try things that I tell them are the best idea of what to do. So I think that as a whole really helps translate into me hoping being the most prepared player I could ever be in my life.
Between the pandemic and lockdowns, how has the past year changed the way you view this experience?
COVID was really hard. COVID, I was very fortunate that my job was fine and all my family members were fine. But that solitude and just being like away from people, I really learned that I'm 100% an extrovert. So that was really difficult. I really love talking with people. I like being with people. I like socializing. So that really, I really felt a little bit of depression at one point. It was a really different type of mental game entirely. But you have to find ways to keep yourself busy, keep yourself positive, keep yourself pushing. Because now here I am fulfilling a life dream I've always had after such a difficult year. So many people had so much negativity over the past year that I feel like it just shows more of the strength that I have, the mental strength, the perseverance that I have, and just like, keep pushing. What else are you going to do? I mean, you got to stay positive. Otherwise, you're just going to like drown in it. So I feel like that really kind of helped push me through more difficult times to see that the drive and the push and the positivity leads to somewhere good.
Broccoli, Mike, is it callous to say I don't feel that bad for people who are talking about how hard 1 year of COVID was?
That's the thing of like, oh, you sweet summer children.
Yeah, Lindsay.
You don't even know what's coming.
I don't know about you. I'm on 2 years.
Omicron is just a word to you, a smattering of letters.
You don't even know about Delta yet.
Exactly. You don't even know the Greek alphabet, probably. At
you
this
thought
point.
It was over.
Exactly. Like, they're dipping back, being like, imagine, oh, this is great. Gonna play Survivor, come on back. It's gonna be the summertime. Everything is gonna be peachy keyed. Mm-hmm. And here we are, and those peaches are a little moldier on the other side of 2022. Well, so let's talk about this sort of life experience for a second, because we spoke about this a bit with Tori as well in the last podcast. This idea of the transactional relationship from an occupational perspective, right? This idea of, in my job, people sit down with me and I sort of talk them through what they're looking to do and convince them to do something. Do you think that, we talked about this, how it maybe won't apply to a game like Survivor, where, again, there aren't specific roles to play in that regard. Do you feel that applies here with Lindsay, or is it a little more loosey-goosey?
You know, it just implies that Survivor is like a little bit more transactional than I think it ultimately ends up being. Like, I feel like the best skills are sort of just like true people skills, as opposed to, you know, I could sit down with somebody and I can, you know, cater my approach to exactly what they're doing. You know, let's see in practice. But I feel like that, you know, people naturally gravitate towards me is sort of like, I think, the most ideal version of this. But I'm sure that there are times where there are people that are able to, you know, cater their approach and it can help them have some success.
So here is my big take on Lindsay. You were asking who's going to be the leader of this tribe. I think ding, ding, ding. I think it's her right here. Specifically because when I asked her, and she's brought up in her minute long video as well, like, what are a couple players that you really associate yourself with? She invokes the name of Stephanie LaGrossa, which people have nary mentioned since Heroes versus Villains aired back when Jackson first applied for the show.
She's a New Jersey person, right?
I very much get, like, I even just listening to it, maybe I sort of like, you know, have the image in my head, but I very much get Stephanie vibes.
Interesting.
From her. I mean, as Stephanie said, right, during that infamous Judd ADD tribal council, right? Like, I'm from Jersey. I'm loud. I'm just like Judd. And Lindsay sort of has that very similar mentality as well. So I think Stephanie was also someone who was very outspoken on, you know, basically all the tribes that she was a part of. And considering that She struck out on her own business. She is a leader in her own right in her day to day. I could very easily see her as someone to be like, yep, I'm going to step up. I'll be the one to certainly take charge or at least talk the most about what we need to do on that first day with the shelter.
Okay, well, we will see. Let's get back to Lindsay.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
I would love to have an alliance partner that is also just as upfront and honest as I am. I'm really to the point, no bullshit. I don't have time to mess around and be passive. So I would love if somebody else was also really straightforward and to the point where we were able to kind of like cut the bullshit out and just get to the point and figure out what we need to do. And also be really honest of what somebody's saying about myself. But also if I tell them that somebody has their name out, they're not going to just blow up everything and be like, Lindsay just told me that you said this. Like, way to screw that up. So somebody who I can trust is not going to sabotage themselves and me in the crossfire of that. So I guess what I hope for in an alliance member would be trust that they're going to be smart enough to make the smartest move that doesn't destroy themselves and me in the process.
Broccoli. Mike, I can't not hear Stephanie LaGrossa now.
See, I told you, right? Like now it's a 2020 Stephanie. Mm-hmm. She's here. She's realized herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, looking for an honest alliance partner and it's not going to blow everything up.
Yeah. I mean, in Guatemala, Stephanie was sort of the one who blew everything up for her alliance members. But fair point. I mean, what's interesting is, I mean, I guess she just lives the idea of no bullshit, right? Considering that she is looking for someone who is just blunt.
But you know what, Mike? There's a lot of BS on Survivor.
I mean, yeah, I mean, she might have some words for a certain host when things happen.
And you have to be able to like dish out the BS and you have to be able to take the BS.
Though I would find it interesting if she gets into a final tribal council situation, right? Because that always requires a certain amount of tact, depending on some people do want the no BS. Some people do sort of want, you know, the Chris Doherty, Todd sort of structure, right? Of like pump them up a little bit. I don't know if that'll play all the time from Lindsay's perspective, but I will be intrigued to see if she finds someone specifically on the Taku tribe who really subscribes that like, just tell me like it is. I don't care how harsh it is mentality.
Okay. All right. Let's hear the rest of what Lindsay has to say.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
The best advice I received was twofold, two different things. One, be yourself. Just be yourself, which is honestly a lot harder than it might seem. And I didn't even start playing yet. And already it's hard for me to do that because obviously I know that who I am is what led me to this game and why I thought I'd be so good at it. But then all you do is you get paranoid and anxious and you start second guessing and you're so in your head about being strategic, you're forgetting to just relax and be you, because being you is what's going to get you much farther. Secondly, is to like kind of, you're not the only one playing. So don't feel like you're the one that has to control and orchestrate the whole thing. Kind of let it roll. See where it goes and work yourself through it and kind of adapt as you go rather than trying to be in control of the whole thing.
Okay. That's Lindsay.
I like how she essentially comes to the conclusion that's the exact opposite of Jonathan, right? Mm-hmm. Jonathan's like, don't get comfortable, make moves, you know, no regrets. And Lindsay's like, maybe ease up on the clutch a bit.
Go with the flow.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not the only person playing.
So, I mean, listen, Lindsay is indeed Stephanie, I don't know, 4.0, I guess, if she is continuing that legacy. I mean, I'm intrigued by it because I think she is someone who could very easily settle into a good role on Taku. Like, she is very physically strong. Obviously, she is someone who could take that leadership position. But, you know, she herself admits that she has a bit of a loud, talkative persona. When she talks about three words to describe herself, she uses much more than three words, essentially. They come down to loud, talkative, and intense personality. So it might be something a la like a Jolanda Jones thing, right? Where like she is very physically strong, but she comes in hot from the get-go and people are like, nope, this is not my speed at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if necessarily like an intense personality always plays on Survivor.
Intense. I mean, I guess it depends on like intense is very intensely personal. Does intense mean just like OTT? I'm not entirely sure. Intense is a very weighty word.
Mm-hmm. Right. So We'll see. We'll see. I mean, there certainly are outliers, people that have won that would have what you would call an intense personality. But I feel like that they tend to get a lot of attention on them and then also, you know, rub people the wrong way. Maybe the 26-day game helps that.
Yeah, if I could, like, you know, project what I think, if I could get my own plan for how I think Lindsay is going to do, I could see her doing well in the pre-merge, where, again, with these, if it's smaller relationships, she's really used to that one-on-one counseling right in her day-to-day. So I could see her establishing those good one-on-one bonds with work, which work especially well on the small tribes. I do think when the merge hits, I could very easily see eyes turn her way in many ways. Like, she's drawing a lot of attention to herself from, you know, a visual perspective, from an auditory perspective.
Yeah, if she continues, especially if you're the loudest person on the other tribe, like, that grates on the tribes.
Yeah, like, I could see her being very much someone that, like, is asked about on these summits, right, to Shipwheel Island, about, like, oh, so what's Lindsay like? So I could see a path for her where she makes it through the pre-merge, but I could see her be one of the big targets come the post-merge almost immediately.
Okay, Mike, anything else on Lindsay?
Nope, that is it on Lindsay for now. I will sort of read one last thing, actually, from Why Do You Believe You Can Be the Sole Survivor? I can definitely outwit everyone since I am very familiar with dealing with different types of people and have always had a strategic mind. I can read people very well and I'm very good at persuading others. Plus, let's be real, people are stupid. And when people are hungry, they forget how to stay composed. Once you see the cracks, it gets easier to outwit. Mm-hmm. So good statements on the human condition from Lindsay there.
All right, Mike, let's talk about another member of this tribe. Let's talk about Mariah. Mariah, the 47-year-old stay-at-home mom from Noblesville, Indiana.
Yes, so current stay-at-home mom. She's actually a teacher educator by trade. And a lot of people were saying that obviously the story with Tiffany, right, was she revealed Tiffany Seeley from last season was that someone on season that was supposed to be on season 41 got COVID at the last second. And so she was asked, she was an alternate. She was asked to be on. A lot of people are speculating this is alternate universe Tiffany, that she might have been the person, because it checks a lot of boxes, right? Teacher, educator, older. We'll certainly talk about how Mariah has a bit of a strong personality, much like Tiffany. So I could certainly see it if they are indeed trying to, like, fill a spot in that regard.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. Mike, anything else you want to set up before we listen to Mariah?
No. So Mariah is a really interesting individual. She'll talk about it, but, you know, this is someone who lost her brother to COVID in 2020, which, remember, they were recording this in 2021. This was less than a year ago. He was one of the first people, I believe the first registered nurse to die of COVID in New York City. Obviously, it's something that has deeply affected her for worse. And actually, from her perspective, for the better. She talks about sort of bringing that to the game, how it has hardened her, but she has a lot of really interesting things to say.
Okay, here is Mariah.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I have written about 20 pages about why I'm here. And I think the short answer is, I think I'm discovering that. I think that I'm on a personal quest journey. I think there are some things I want to learn about myself. I think there are challenging things that I want to show myself that I can actually do and that I'm up to and capable of. And I'm here to entertain my parents. They've had a really, really difficult 2020. My brother passed with COVID, and I just think they are going to be tickled by this. They already are, but more so when they see it. I'm here for my boys. My 10-year-old and I right now are, I'd say, super fans. We watch all the time. He and I watch together. And we submitted our audition tape together. I mean, it's just a fun thing for he and I. So I've got a lot of whys.
What's your history with Survivor?
Now, my oldest is 20 years old, and he was a 2-pound, 6-month preemie when he was born. And he had to stay in the NICU for a couple of months. And so I would go out and eat while he was in the hospital, and the TV was on, and there was Survivor. It was season one. And that is, I mean, I was hooked. I loved the whole just the social, just, you know, these random people coming together trying to figure this crazy situation out. So I was, it was just fascinating to me. But I will say I didn't want to play then. I mean, I just loved the people and the humanity of it all. So I watched for many years when my oldest was about 8. He watched with me. So I've had a season of years with my oldest. And now, so it's funny to come full circle. Well, now my youngest is also a fan and we're having our fun with Survivor. I don't think it was until 2020 that I had a major shift from, I mean, I thoroughly enjoy, just loved watching, but never had that itch to like go out and play. I mean, I've never been camping. I've never just bugs. All of that is not me. And something shifted in 2020. And I think a lot of it was COVID and quarantine and loss and just wanting to live, you know, whatever life I have to the fullest every single day, every single minute. So Survivor became a little more metaphorical for me as opposed to just enjoying watching the game. Like this is life at its peak. This is living, you know, pushing yourself as far as you can possibly go. And you don't even know how far that is. A lot of us don't have an opportunity to really push ourselves. I mean, it just became juicy and desirable and all of the things that make me uncomfortable all of a sudden, it's weird, but to want to be uncomfortable, like, oh, I want that. I want to sleep outside. I want to figure out, you know, why I'm afraid of some of the things that I'm afraid of and conquer those.
Broccoli. Yeah. So that was a lot, but God, the first thing I have to think of is that she said juicy and now stupid juicy Dave is in my head.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Do you think that maybe is that the origin story for juicy Dave, that this experience for him, like was so juicy?
I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe in the 20 years prior the show has existed, Rob, nobody has described the Survivor experience as juicy. And now we are 2 for 2. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this is the year of juice. For some reason, mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone's checked on O.J. Simpson lately.
I mean, Kayo Kalin was just on Big Brother.
Yeah, exactly. Stewing in his own juices, isn't a man ever speaking.
I like what you said about stew.
Yeah, so obviously a big tragedy in Mariah's life. But I mean, you really have to treasure and appreciate what she used this as sort of like a sign of, right, of this idea of life is too short. You have to sort of take the chances and make the most of, you know, every single breath that we're given. And Rob, I mean, I don't know if this invokes the soapbox you were on last time about her calling Survivor life at its peak, but here she is.
Yeah, I mean, life is hard and full of hardships. The Survivor, like, should be a celebration. Like, Survivor will push you, but I think it's, like most people would say, it's the greatest thing that they did in their lives.
But it's interesting because... you know, let's go back to, I believe it was Roxroy, right? When his interview, when he's like, no, it's about the money. Anybody who says they're coming out here for the experience is lying to you. So I do find that an interesting counter that, no, there are some people like Mariah who is genuinely out here just for the experience of all. Now, look, $1 million would be nice.
Enjoy the experience, yeah. But.
Yeah, well, that's the big question as well, right? Is like, will Mariah get too involved one way or the other in the experience, whether it's like her, you know, wanting to explore the environment that she misses things, or her being like, I want to have a blind side. I want to do this, that she just overplays.
And if you're at Roxroy and you're out there for the money, you hope that there are 17 other people that are out there for the experience.
I mean, that's true as well, right? So then you can kind of swoop in, but that's also and Tori even talked about this as well, right? She really astutely put out that this idea of, you know, everyone's out here for a different reason. So you have to sort of plan the way you approach each person based on that. Look no further than like Mariah and Roxroy, who I think are on two very different ends of that spectrum. Someone who is like, nope, this is just a business trip, to quote, you know, a previous Survivor winner, versus someone who's like, no, I want this to be a life-changing experience.
Okay, let's get back to Mariah.
What's your favorite moment in Survivor history?
It's a Taj moment. I've shown this. My husband hasn't seen Survivor at all, but he's seen that moment several times. So it is the season 18, and it is the auction, and everyone is lined up, and Jeff offers, I don't know, a letter or some communication. No, maybe they get to hear. Yeah, they get to hear a phone recording message from family. Now, she's a new mom at this point and, you know, been struggling being away from her new child, her new baby. And she wins the auction and a couple of people, I feel like, either give her money or don't go for the auction. So they want her to win it. And she gets to listen to this video on this phone, and she hears her husband, and he's sitting on the couch holding the baby. You know, he's encouraging and cheering her on, and she is just falling apart. I mean, tears, wailing, and so forth. And then the message ends, and she bends over, and she's crying. And Jeff is like, "Yeah, did you hear those last words?" And she's, you know, so into the moment of the dramatics and crying. And then she repeats the last words. And what he says is, "I'll see you back at camp." And there's this moment, she stands up, she stands up because she's leaned over, her eyes pop open. She reaches across the table, she grabs Jeff's arm, and she's like, "I'll see you back. And it is just so precious, that moment, to literally watch her process and figure out that her husband is there and that she is going to get to see him. I just love that moment. Absolute favorite moment.
Broccoli. Yeah. Look at this. A Taj Johnson George reference in the year of our Lord. I mean, Jeff, 2022. I love it. I absolutely love it. Like, again, we talked about how super duper fans, like, super fandom is a minimum to come onto Survivor nowadays, but I love the polls some of these contestants are making. I mean, even in my interview with her for Parade, when I said, "Give me one winner and one non-winner you most identify with," non-winner was Taj. She says, "I reference her a lot because I love her personality. I love her game. She got very close to winning, but did not win. She reminds me of me. I think people underestimated how hard she was really playing, or even that she was playing. But she did it in what I call a graceful way. I really identify with her. I hope she plays again one day."
Okay. I mean, it's a good moment.
It's a great moment.
Yeah.
I was trying to look it up while we were listening here about whether we had done an outwit, outplayout list for auction moments. I don't think we did, but this would certainly be up there. This is one of the most, you know, talked about and heartwarming auction moments we've ever seen.
Okay. Let's go back to Mariah.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
I have a handful, but I think, you know, the most recent, I would have to say the loss of my brother, just that tough skin, but yet not too tough to not have a social game and just be about, you know, my business. But I would say, coupled with that, would just be growing up in a multiracial home with two parents that did not agree on anything and the way it should be done. And I found it really humorous because it taught me, you know, as a little kid, I'm watching my parents talk about, you know, how tomatoes should be properly sliced on a salad, or if you were supposed to put sugar in grits or not, you know, constant debates about trivial things. And it just, so early on, I'm like, you know, there really isn't a right and wrong to a lot of things. You got to figure out what works for you. And you also have to allow people to do what works for them. So that has just helped me a lot in life. And I think it will help me a lot in this game to not be too closed and narrow and thinking and, you know.
Broccoli, Mike, I didn't even know about the cutting tomatoes thing.
Yeah, I did not either. I mean, full disclosure, I did grow up in an all white household. So I guess I'm used to slicing my tomatoes a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And you never put sugar in your grits.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm a sugarless. Listen, no bullshit, no sugar in my grits.
Yeah.
That's how I eat it.
Okay. Boy, I want to get to the bottom of this. Okay. All right. Let's go back to Mariah.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
I don't have any unrealistic thoughts about loyalty and trust. I mean, I kind of think there's a 24-hour trust, you know, like what is today and what we agree on today, it might not be the case tomorrow. I would like just to have that candid understanding. Like, you know, you're not selling your soul. And I'm not going to hate you if you change your mind tomorrow. We're playing a game. I really want someone to enjoy the game with. I mean, really, I want to have fun. I want to laugh. I want someone, you know, I want to go out and I want to be the provider. You know, I haven't seen a woman do that. That is like probably, you know, number one on my list. Like, I want to go fishing. I don't know. It seems so exciting. So I would love to have an alliance partner that's just adventurous and doesn't want to just sit under the shelter and talk, but just eat up this experience, you know, with me, a lively person. I don't know. I just don't want to sit around.
Broccoli. You know, when we talk about these alliance partners, like, you know, you can't help but like make the metaphor of like talking about like in relationships, and, you know, people like want different things where it's sort of like where we've heard a lot of different players talk about. And this is interesting that Mariah talks about a, you know, basically like a 24-hour trust where it's sort of like, all right, just because we said something today doesn't necessarily. So it sounds like that she is looking for something that's like pretty loose of like, hey, like we're working together, but, you know, if I have another option, I want to be able to feel like I can go do other things, like a little bit more of like an open relationship, where I think it's very hard to probably in dating and in Survivor to set that up like, hey, we're working together, but like we'll both be cool if like other things are coming up.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of a Ricard and Shan thing, right? Was this idea of, yeah, we're working together, but there's going to be a point of we're going to have to cut each other or explore other options as well. I mean, it might be a new paradigm, too.
But you know, even that, like, I feel like was never, they, like, I feel like that both of them said, like, well, I would have, if, like, the other one would have said something, like, said they wanted to work with me, I would have, but we never nailed it down.
A real Ross and Rachel thing, right? Of like, oh, I like you when you're dating someone else, and now you don't. Now you like me, but I'm already moved on to somebody else. Just like two, you know,
feel like that trains. Ricard felt like the him and Shan were on a break. Is that what happened?
Yeah, exactly. And then like he found his little monkey in Xander, and then the rest was history. So yeah, it's a really interesting idea, but also the fact that, like you mentioned, strategically the relationship seems open, but she also wants to find someone that like socially she can have a lot of fun with as well. And I guess the question is, how is she going to be able to separate that, right? Like, if she is laughing it up with somebody each and every day, but then is like, all right, now I'm going to have to vote against you. Is that easier said than done? Another fun thing, part of this is that, you know, much like Jeannie, right? She wants to be a provider for the tribe. Let's see how that works with Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Does she have any sort of like a fishing prowess, or is she going to be more of like a gatherer?
I mean, if you recall from earlier in her answer, she said that like the outdoors is not for her. Yeah. The bugs and all that.
She
is
likes
not
to
her
garden.
Vibe.
So maybe she can find some of those coconut trees that are planted.
Yeah, she could dig them. Like, no, you won't believe it. A fully sprouted coconut tree with like freshly planted soil was found here. And I found it all of them. So maybe she'll be able to forage and Jonathan will take
like
care of the fish.
Tiffany has talked a lot about how she was like big on finding the crabs. So, you know, that you don't have to only spearfish to provide on Survivor.
Oh, yeah. They might crack open some baby turtles that they find.
Okay. All right. More Mariah.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
I'm going to take my Dylan's, my 10-year-old, as I was leaving. He said, listen, Mom, don't be too good, but don't be bad. Don't be last. Don't come in anything last. He said, don't talk too much, but don't talk too little. Mom, you got to play the middle. You got to play the middle. It's exactly how he said it. I mean, I wrote it down. I'm like, all right, Dylan.
Broccoli. Good advice. That might be the best of any of the advices that we heard from any of these Survivor 42 contestants.
I know we roll our eyes at the game within a game, but like future Survivor players might have a good head of how to play the show once they end up coming on, you know, 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
So I have it on my goals list that at the live reunion show, I want to meet Tyler Perry. I know that he's into the show and he gives Jeff suggestions, but yeah, I want to sit down and have lunch with Tyler Perry and talk about writing and story and all that good stuff.
When you're ugly. Yeah. Bad news, Mariah. about that reunion show.
Yeah, I guess we'll see for the, you know, it, you would think it seems unlikely, but, you know, hopefully
I would imagine
things are
that,
trending in the right direction.
Yeah, but I would also say that at the time that I don't think there would have been a 26 okay. day difference where they would have been like, oh, I'm pretty sure by this time next year things will be okay.
Well, I do wonder if like let's just like live in a world where like things like you know, continue to improve, okay, have improved enough to the point where in May they can, maybe they don't have an audience, but maybe they feel like, okay, we can get together with like, think that they would just like throw out what they recorded on the location.
No, I don't think so, because Jeff loved the raw and candid aspect of it, right? Like, he loved this idea of, like, let's get everyone's thoughts as they're, like, awkwardly, you know, scarfing down pizza and champagne and, like,
these, I wonder maybe if they would do something where it's, like, you know, if they could get together safely, like, would they consider it?
I think it'd be fun. Like, I think it'd be fun to get, like, 41 and 42 together, almost, and almost, like, talk about playing in the new era of Survivor. That would almost feel like something, like, we as a network could do if it's not possible for CBS to do. Because I do think that... I talked about this when 41 aired.
Yeah.
That I would love to split the difference of do, like, a the on-island stuff, and then do, like, even if it's a virtual, like, then a check-in show, almost like what happened with America's Tribal Council, or, like, the week after there's a show where... maybe there's Zoom interviews pre-recorded with certain people about, like, okay, now that you've watched the show back,
yeah,
what has been your reaction to everything? Because that's fundamentally different from in the moment.
And not for anything, if CBS isn't up for it, Tyler Perry, that all he does is film production during COVID at his compound in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. So, and Mariah wants to meet him.
He could host them.
Exactly. Let me also mention, actually, I'm going all the way back here, but I forgot to mention, Jackson had a very funny answer for what celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for?
Lex Luger?
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan would love it. But he said, Abraham Lincoln. That guy was absolutely a badass. That would be the best thing ever. He'd be cool and quiet, but you know he was the man.
Yeah. And Lincoln was the man.
Lincoln was the man. Yeah, people were saying that a lot. He was the man. But I would just love to see, like, all right, Jackson, here's your friend, Abe, come on out.
Abe, now, what's it like being a president, but also being a loved one?
47 years ago, Jackson applied to be on Survivor. Now he's here.
Okay, let's hear what else Mariah has to say.
When you're at your lowest moment in the game, what's one happy memory you'll pull from in your time of need?
My happy memory in my lowest point will be my brother, going grocery shopping every other Saturday. My mom would take us to Meijer, and I don't know why, but it took her 8 hours to grocery shop. So we would be at Meijer for 8 hours. And at some point, he would literally start dancing down the aisles. And I'm talking leaps and pirouette, like the full-blown same thing. And I was so embarrassed as a kid. I would like hide in between clothes or something. I just didn't want anyone to see me with him. But I laugh at that. I bust out laughing every time I think of it. But it also reminds me, you know, that's what he would go on and do later, was be a professional dancer. That was his dream. That was his passion. He didn't care that anyone was looking at him at the grocery store. He was going to dance. And that memory says to me, you know, have your moment, but now you need to dance down the aisle or down the beach. Do what you got to do, but you're here. So dance.
All right. So a nice memory there from Mariah.
Yeah, I wanted to include that in the recording as well, because I just think it's a really beautiful story and a beautiful sentiment as well. You know, it's quite literally, it's just dance. It'll be okay. This idea of like, yeah, you like make a fool out of yourself, but at the end of the day, you enjoy the time that you have, which I think really is this attitude that she is bringing into the show in general, which I think is really fun. That being said, I have no clue how she is going to do in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They asked her, what past Survivor will you play the game most like? She said, ironically, a mix between Angelina and Tony. After Angelina's turbulent first few weeks, she slipped under the radar, made it to the end. Tony brought an upbeat, funny, and light energy. By the time he was recognized as a threat, it was too late. Now, I think that a little bit of different stories, I feel like that people probably wanted to go to the end with Angelina because of her turbulent start to the game.
And also turbulent middle, right? There was that entire thing at like the merge vote with the Elizabeth stuff. So yeah, it's interesting. There's sort of like the dualities, right, of the person who essentially was brought to the end for that reason versus the guy who was like the chalk pick to win in both final tribal council scenarios that he went into. So I guess you find that that delicate balance in a manner of speaking.
Maybe I could see a little bit more if she loves Tyler Perry, maybe Tony 1.0, where maybe it's a little bit more of like, okay, if you go to the end with Tony, like he's a little bit more of a loose cannon, and maybe that if you were, you know, had a little bit more than Wu, maybe you could beat Tony in the end.
Tyler Perry, can I have your idol? Tyler Perry. Yeah. Tyler Perry.
Okay. Mike, anything else you want to say about Mariah?
Yeah, so the thing is, like, Mariah as a person, I really fell in love with her listening to this interview. Like, her story is absolutely heartbreaking, but I just love her personality, the way that she regards everything. You know, she has her association with these, like, really unique Survivor characters. Again, I'm obsessed with this idea that she brought up Taj, who I think is someone that, like, a lot of us really in-depth Survivor fans think of, but I don't know if your average Survivor contestant does. And she has a lot of really unique experiences that I think are very cool. But on the other side, you know, she has this idea that she really hasn't done anything outdoors before that could really make her stick out in these early days, right? If she feels uncomfortable at all, that might draw a lot of eyes on her. You know, she says that, I believe she says she does Pilates as one of her hobbies. I'm not sure from a physical perspective how she may stack up, but if Taku does indeed end up becoming Luvu, she might be able to slip through to the post-merge. If she does, I think she becomes a really great presence, and I think someone who has a fairly interesting head on her shoulders that could do really well. But she is one of the people that I'm worried about in the pre-merge, just because she doesn't feel entirely comfortable in this situation compared to other people on her tribe.
Right. I feel like I could see like her and Jackson bonding. Like, I feel like both of the two biggest hearts on the tribe.
And they are they're the two parents on the tribe as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I feel like I could see a bond there. And then I'm not really sure how she fits in with Jonathan. And I feel like that with Lindsay, I feel like it could go either way.
Yeah. And well, because that's the thing as well, is that, you know, she talks in my question about what would you think people will perceive you as? She says, like, you know, I'm an older female, so probably someone motherly, but there's no like Swathi on this tribe, right? Like, there's no Lydia. There is not a younger person or a Zach, someone who would probably look to her as that motherly figure, much like, you know, Heather did kind of with Deshaun. I'm not necessarily seeing that here. Like, everyone here is pretty much like, I mean, Marianne might be who we're talking about next, is probably the lone exception. But otherwise, I don't know how that perception might help her game. But I really do think she's someone who, like, once she gets out her feet from under her, I think is someone who could do well in the post-merge portion. It's just she's one of those types, I think, that you have to get past that pre-merge, and then otherwise you're pretty golden.
Okay. You mentioned Marianne. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, I'm very excited to talk about Marianne. We'll hear what she has to say right after this. All right, Mike, let's talk about another member of the Taku tribe. And this is my pick for, I think, the breakout star of Survivor 42. I think it's this woman, Marianne.
So is this preemptive based on the little clip we saw at the end of 42? Or is this like you looking ahead to May Rob saying the exact same thing?
Well, I just feel like that she's been in a lot of commercials. I totally can understand why. She's a big personality. I think she's going to be a lot of fun. Like, I could see this being our Elaine or Christian or like, you know, Rick Devins, or like, a character that's sort of like a big breakout character from a season.
I can absolutely see that. I think she is going to be confessional gold. So I do think from that perspective, something that a lot of these people have in common is the airtime perspective. And I completely agree. I mean, you'll get this sense from listening to Marianne. When people describe themselves as bubbly and ebullient, you always worry, right, about, okay, are they actually, or are they just claiming that they are? In all ways, I believe that Marianne truly is. I dare people to listen to this interview and not smile. Now, will that correspond to,
gamesmanship. You mentioned those people that are all fan favorites, but what do they have in common? They did not get to the final three. So we'll see, you know, if correlation does not equal causation here.
Okay. She is 24. She is Canadian. She's from Ajax, Ontario. She is a seminary student. I've seen a clip going around of her the last couple of days of her in the audience at a Big Brother Canada taping.
Oh, interesting. Well, yes, she is Canadian. So I guess that makes sense. I mean, I believe she's tweeting about Celebrity Big Brother as well. So this is like very much a Ricard thing, right? If we recall when we were in the preseason for 41, Ricard had been doing a podcast talking about Big Brother 23. So I'm glad this carries over now that we have, you know, CBS, future CBS contestants, even though they played in the past, supporting other CBS products. Maybe this is making way for a future like trifecta season, right, where we have like a crossover with bringing on people like Ricard and Marianne onto Big Brother if they have the interest.
Okay, all right, well, let's see how this goes first with Marianne before we cast her into a Big Brother season.
Not put the cart before the Keith nail.
And also,
there, the tuck.
Marianne, protect your peace. You don't need the Big Brother experience. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Very, I mean, listen, considering the week that we are talking about this, I think very much so. Someone like Marianne, I do fear for their lives in that type of environment.
Okay. All right. Let's hear what Marianne has to say.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I'm here on Survivor because, number one, I love the game, but I think that I could say that everybody loves the game. But the reason why I'm personally here on Survivor is because I feel as if it's like, I have a story to tell where it's like, I'm a super weird kid and like, I want to prove to me and to like other people that like, you can be weird and don't have to change yourself to succeed.
Broccoli. Yeah. I feel like that I've heard this a lot from her about that. She's here to, you know, keep Portland weird. You know, she's here to represent all the weirdos out there.
I guess, is it keep Canada weird? I don't know how Canadians feel about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. What's the weirdest city in Canada?
I mean, listen.
Let us know. You know, we are humble Americans. It is not our place to brand Canadian cities weird or not weird.
That's the thing. Like, I do not want to incur the wrath of our neighbors to the north, whatever wrath they may bring, considering the niceties that Canadians usually bring about, like, no, how dare you say that this is the weirdest city? Yeah. But we're finding out so much about Canada, Rob. I'm so happy that Survivor has been opened up to Canadians for so many reasons. One of them probably being we now know just through these contestants that apparently in Canada, Survivor is not only a religion, but also pretty weird as well. Mm-hmm. This is fun. I like finding out more about, you know, neighboring countries through our Survivor contestants.
Yes. And Marianne, thank you for doing it for Mike and I, because I think ask anybody who knows us, real weird.
I mean, weird is an understatement for me personally. Like, I think if someone comes on and says I'm doing it for the bizarre people, I think then I'll truly feel seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Back to Marianne.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
One is just so hard. Like, I'm going to be a cheat and go with two for each of them. And like, for the Survivor winner who I'm most like, I'm going to go with, I want to say, let's say, Sarah Lucina, because she was someone who was like, oh yeah, like she has my, like, we're all friends, we're all buddy buddy, then she'd stab you in the back and like, hopefully that's what I want to do. And like, taking a way back, like I'd say even Vesepia, because Vesepia was someone who's religious like me, and like she was the first person to orchestrate a flip and like just kind of like and that just like changed the whole tone of the game, and I really see myself in her as well. As for non-winners, I actually also too, because like I said, I'm a cheater. And like, I would say like outside, I'd say like I'm more like Lauren Beck from season 39, where it's like outgoing and bubbly. And kind of like my inside is a little bit more like Gabby Pacuzzi from season 37, where it's like I'm neurotic, I'm super emotional. And then maybe we can add like a little bit of a dash of Debbie from season 32, not 34, just 32.
Broccoli. I like the.
All right, so we got to really go to the ingredient list here.
Yes.
So I really interesting mishmash. And listen, Marianne, I'm very glad you cheated from this perspective, because a lot of insight as to the various people that you are picking from. Again, I'm loving these polls, Rob, of a Sepia Towery reference. Obviously came to prominence a lot in the past couple of years based on, you know, the interview we did with her and then the sole survivors of it all. But very fun to see. And honestly, I kind of see it. You know, we'll get into Marianne's faith. She is a seminary student. We obviously knew that was something that was big in Vesepia as well. So I'm glad that Marianne, she is a fairly recent fan. I should mention here, I didn't include the question in our audio interview, but when I asked her, what's your history with Survivor? The first season she fully watched is David versus Goliath. And then she went back and watched all the seasons. So maybe Vesepia is top of mind for her, and that's why she picked her, but still pretty deep pull.
I really feel like for whatever reason that that story is not uncommon with the people that have been cast on Survivor in the last year. I feel like that, no, like I wasn't watching Survivor, but yeah, I found David versus Goliath. And then I went and I went watched the whole show. I don't know what it was necessarily that got people in on David versus Goliath as sort of like the entry, but great season. But I don't know if like CBS did something in particular with the marketing that season where that was just how they got people in. But they found a lot of people that way.
Yeah. Could it be that Cagayan is to the 2010s as David versus Goliath is to the 2020s? Mm-hmm. Perhaps this idea of like, here's a very solid season that sort of evokes the era without necessarily including too much of its negatives around it that people can just sort of use as an easy, right? It's an all newbie season. You don't need any sort of knowledge of past players that you can just use as an easy access point. Either that or maybe Marianne's just a big Mike White fan. And so she decided to finally see, oh, Ned Schneebly is on playing Survivor. I guess I better check the show out.
Yeah. So you think that maybe she's like a School of Rock fan?
I think she's a fan. And so maybe, I mean, listen, if
or maybe of another film.
I mean, if Marianne was an emoji, I think it would be the just like beaming smile. So maybe she feels like she could really, I don't know, vibe with him. But yeah, she has, engaged in a lot of Survivor. You bring up a good point, though. I mean, Deshaun was somebody else, I think, who did a very similar thing. I guess we're discovering more and more why David versus Goliath was the one of those seasons to make the second cut of Netflix seasons that got released.
I mean, I might be mistaken. I think that's Evie's story also.
Yeah, that's a good call as well. I'll have to do some fact checking while we're talking here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, go Survivor David versus Goliath. And so you'd imagine that while Marianne was pulling from the old, she did pull from the new, right? She did make a reference to your friend and mine, Gabby Pascuzzi, about her neuroses on the inside. While on the outside, she might be a little bit more Lauren Beck with, as you mentioned, a dash of Debbie from season 32, not 34, okay? She can cross a balance beam, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Strategy in that like moment of pause where it's like, these are human beings who have people who love them and just like, look at them like all like with their family because it's like, I'm always like a baby just bawling and crying. And like my one time all favorite scene is David versus Goliath. You always remember your first, where I think Gabby was talking to Christian and Gabby was like, do you want to play with me? And Christian was like, oh, in the sand? And I'm just like, that's gold.
Between the pandemic and lockdowns, how has the past year changed the way you view this experience?
I feel as if the last year was just a really great year for everyone to take a step back and pause and reflect on themselves. So they're like, okay. So I'm just like, okay, I like Survivor. I'm just like, but like, do I like it enough to go on? Like, it's like, why do I want to go on? Because it's like, you can love the show, but you can be able to still fully experience it without being on. So it kind of like made me think, why do I want to go on? Like, what am I trying to prove to myself? Why do I love this show? It's like, am I willing to go and put like a part of me and a part of like my whole life into this show?
What's something that other players might dislike about you?
I think the thing that players will dislike about me is that I can just never shut up. Like, I just keep on yadda yadda yadda, blah, 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 talking, like, oh my God, like, is she going to stop? Does she breathe? Does she need to breathe? Like, I think you need to breathe because she just doesn't stop. So that's something which I know that I'll need to control because I love talking. Is you have one mouth and two ears. I'm sure I'm doing more listening than talking on that.
Broccoli. All right, so let's talk about Marianne's talking of it all. Because look, far from us to sort of throw the stone in the already shattered glass house of us being like, yeah, too talkative on a show like Survivor, that's no good. But, I mean, talk to me about it, Rob. As the player, how much does the talkative aspect really play for or against somebody on the island?
It depends on what you're talking about. I mean, she mentioned Lauren as somebody that she wants to play. I think that people would say Lauren is definitely very talkative. But it's like, if you are entertaining, like we've heard a lot of players in the history of Survivor, where like Katie Gallagher comes to mind, where it's like, oh, they were so entertaining out there. We just love. It was so wonderful. Like, they helped the time go by. We loved this person. We loved being around Lauren because she made it so fun. Like, if you can be that person, that's great. If what she's talking about is like, hey, who left? Whose shirt is this over here? What's going on? What are you doing? Like, you know, if she's going to be like, you know, not to cite a different member of season, maybe a Nora, like, or somebody who's like, maybe, you know, getting on people's nerves to some degree, that's not good. So like, talking in itself is not a bad thing. It's just it's a matter of like, how is that talking being received?
Right. And I think it's a matter of tone as well. Right. To your point, if it's more so complaining about others, then maybe that talkative is more received, as opposed to sometimes it might just become white noise at the end of the day. Right. With just the sounds of the jungle might be Marianne chattering. I mean, that being said, I agree. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a completely bad thing, because, again, my perception of Marianne is that she doesn't really seem like the type to complain that much. In general, now this might be, you know, something that we get proven wrong about, and she has a really tough time out there and becomes super negative. But it just seems like the way that she approaches life, she just spoke about it, right? In, you know, what has the past year done for you in terms of your own thinking? And so I would imagine that, if anything, her talking will be received positively. Maybe I'm manifesting it, but it seems like from just her personality, I don't think a lot of people are going to be like, oh my God, please. Especially, I think, with the people that she's playing with. There's not really like a Sydney type in this group, right? That would just completely slam someone like Marianne for never being able to shut up.
And is she talking to people and having conversations, or is she just like, you know, jabbering? I think that that's a difference, but I can't imagine that she's going to be a big complainer. I mean, I feel like that she seems to be coming from a pretty humble background as a seminary student. It's her dream to be on the show. She's 24 years old. Like, I think that this is going to be, you know, nothing but, you know, wish fulfillment for her.
Right. And I think she does say something in her bio, right, about what's something we would never know from looking at you. I am a great listener. Just because I talk a lot, it does not mean I'm not listening. People are so used to hearing me when I am there. So when I am quiet, people usually don't think I'm there, and I can take notice on what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Also, I check in on people and let them vent to me, which gives me more context about them that can help guide my future decisions. And she sort of alluded to this in the answer in the clip. Right. She says that, you know, I was born with one mouth and two ears. So the math checks out, unless you're Brad Culpepper in that regard. So I do think maybe she's almost like maybe too self-deprecating with that answer, in a manner of speaking. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I'm glad that she acknowledged that she can sometimes be the Robin Williams and be like, oh, what are we doing around here? Oh, look at that pot. Possum stove. I'm a pothead now. But at the same time, I think she's maybe undervaluing her ability to, while, you know, give talk a lot, the conversations aren't necessarily one-sided.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to Marianne.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
I'm partnering over the idea of like ultimate honesty. So kind of like, you know, where it's like, if we're both on the same level of threat, a lot of times what you see in alliances is that if someone sees, oh, you know, it's mid game, this person's a threat and I'm a threat, I'm going to cut them off. What happens is that the next person actually gets cut off immediately after. So one thing which I'm trying to realize is someone who like go and be risky, where it's like, okay, like we got to go just one more vote. Okay, now's the time to go. Now's the time to go and like fight against each other. So someone who's willing to go, be patient, but also willing to go and jump in.
Broccoli. It sounds like she's really describing like the Shannon Ricard situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I want to sort of also tie this into something that came out in her 1 minute video, where she said the hardest thing for her will be breaking bonds in the game. This idea of, okay, I really made friends with somebody, but at the end of the day, can I do what is needed to progress myself in there? And so, I don't know, it's not exactly lying completely counter with what she mentioned, but I do find it interesting, that duality of, okay, it'd be nice to be with somebody who I can ride with, and then we say, okay, let's go in separate directions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she's also worried from her own social perspective that she'll have a tough time dealing with those issues of physically looking someone in the face and casting them a vote.
Yeah, I feel like that we've heard a couple of players describe this, and they're describing something that's not really a thing. Like, I can't really think of the situation where, you know, one party is like, hey, just, okay, I don't think I can beat you, so, like not yet, but one more vote, and then we'll go after each other and see what happens. Like, I feel like that, you know, just going from my own experience, that I feel like that kind of happened with me and Alex, where I feel like that he was trying to say that. I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. That doesn't work for me, what you're saying. So let me get the jump on that and get you out now. And I feel like that's sort of like the logical conclusion. So yeah, maybe there's a scenario where that happens, but I feel like that the only way that like actually works is like, hey, let's just get to the final four. And then at the final four, you know, let's, you know, and even then it's like, well, if you're going to take me out at the final four, then I'm going to, you know, go for you at the final five, you know, and you end up in sort of like prisoner's dilemma of who's going to strike first.
Oh, don't use that word.
They love a prisoner's dilemma on Survivor.
I was going to say, it's a very vague term. We still don't know exactly what it means in Survivor terms.
You're either working together to get to a common goal, or, you know, one person is sabotaging the other. Like, I don't think that, like, it really is a thing on Survivor where it's like, okay, this alliance has an expiration date of this point, and then, you know, we'll go our separate ways.
Yeah, that feels a little more Big Brother-y to me, right? Where they often play to stages. Yeah, of like, okay, let's just make it to the jury. I mean, that was very much like the Ron Clark thing, right? Of, all right, we're just going to make it to the family visit. And what happened? People were like, I'd like to go a little bit further than just seeing my loved one. Mm-hmm. So let's, you know, sort of chop people off there. I mean, it's an interesting idea on paper, right? Especially with the hyper-modern seasons. It's like, all right, I don't want to make too many promises to too many people for the final three, because just knowing how things go with the game, plans might change. At the same time, especially on, imagine, this accelerated 26-day format, people may get frustrated with the idea of almost this hype, what is Marianne used as a term? Ultimate honesty of, yeah, like, well, we'll get to six, we'll get to eight and see what happens. No, I mean, ideally in a Survivor game, you want to be able to make some end game plans with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that maybe like what we're trying to describe is like, I you know, I want to be with in an alliance with people who are sort of like cards up and like won't take it personally. But I kind of feel like that's not necessarily like ultimate honesty, where we can sort of like decide like, OK, well, if I can't beat you, I'm going to, you know, vote you out at a certain point.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued to see this from Marianne, because to your point, if you talk about sort of Survivor history with this idea, like the paradigm has come forward since the days of what happened with you and Alex, since the days of the aforementioned Road to Four, right, with Vesepia, where blatantly prognosticating the pecking order is not good. Even look as recently as Blood versus Water of Jervis going 1-2-3-4 to realize that it incentivizes players to flip in that capacity. But now, as we saw with Shannon Ricard, you know, have things shifted a little bit back to that thing where everyone is gaming so hard and things are so meta that people are becoming more okay with saying, okay, we'll get to a certain extent. Does to your point, does the final four fire making help with that as well? That like all bets are off when that round happens with no regular voting.
But just to go back to that, like, I don't think Ricard was okay with that, because that he made a move on Shan before when Shan said, okay, one more vote, let's work together for one more vote. I mean, that wasn't okay with Ricard. Ricard, you know, like if you could say like, okay, well, they're the people that are having like the, you know, talks about the, you know, defining that relationship. You know, if it doesn't work for one person, it's not going to be ultimate honesty that they're going to get the jump on you before you said it was kosher to get the jump on them.
Yeah, I mean, and on the other side, you know, Shan made those claims, right, that she was ready to have that black alliance of her, Deshaun, Danny, and Liana to make it to the four. And at that point, she was like, I'm fine going out at four. Clearly, they were not entirely trusting her on that, or like they didn't want to go to four with her. So they voted her out as well. So, yeah, it's a good point that, well, maybe some people have that philosophy in mind. Maybe it's still going to take a little while before we necessarily get to that stage, if at all. All right. And she is not going to be the last person to make this claim as all. There's going to be another player that I think we're talking about next week who makes a very similar claim of like, hey, if you say final six, final eight, and then you break our deal, then that's totally fine. And it's intriguing to me. And it makes me wonder, you know, how far has that circle come along?
Well, I think that, like, you could be saying, like, I want to look for alliance partners who will not take things personally. Like, they could go after me. I'm not going to take it personally. And those are the types of people I want to work with because I know I'm going to betray them, but I want to know that I'm going to be able to still get their votes in the end. But I think that when you establish a relationship of, like, ultimate honesty, like if it doesn't work out, I think that those tend to be the people that are the most upset because their relationship was, you know, you can't have ultimate honesty without complete trust.
Yeah. And then that makes me wonder, obviously, again, Marianne has a lot of already in the pregame set up some internal strife with this idea of breaking bonds with people and voting them out. I do wonder, in the unfortunate circumstance where it is reciprocated and she gets blindsided, how is she going to react to her own bonds being broken? You know, if it is done to her, will she have a tough time extricating her own social bonds from that promise of just one more vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also going to be like the thing that Marianne, I think, is going to have to navigate as a seminary student. I think that people are going to have a lot of trust in her once they know that fact. Like, well, I'm good with Marianne. And then if she does double cross somebody, like, I feel like that there's like, wait, how, you're a seminary student. How could you, you lied to me. You betrayed me. I trusted you. So I think that she needs to be armed with like a defense. Like, okay, yeah, that was your perception. I never said I was going to play the game a certain way because of that.
Now, it's a good point. She is a seminary student, but I don't know if we've defined what her sect is. Rob, could it be possible? Drea did tell us Survivor is a religion in Canada. Could she be a Survivor seminary student?
That would be incredible.
If she's like, the final three, like, all right, everybody, I've got a reveal for you. My religion is Survivor. And she takes out, like, over her on her necklace is, I don't know, like a picture of Jeff Probst. Like, this was my religion. And so I did everything for it. I'm the most devout Survivor follower yet. Give me the money. Mm-hmm. You pay the tithe to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Marianne.
How are you personally different after a year of lockdown?
I think one thing which I'm more different after a year of lockdown is that I learned a little bit more about myself, specifically how I interact with people. Especially in my childhood, I was bullied regularly. And, like, you know, your childhood changes who you are as a person. And one thing which I realized about myself is that sometimes when I feel as if someone hurt me or someone hurt me in that situation, what I'll do is that I'll withdraw and I'll wait for them to come to me. And sometimes that just doesn't work because you need to be able to communicate what's wrong or like what's the difficult thing. So that year of lockdown made me reflect and be like, okay, Marianne, like this is who you are, but like this situation might work sometimes, but it won't always work other times. So how are you going to change the way that you interact with people interpersonally so you can be better just in the game of Survivor and in life?
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
I don't really follow celebrities, and I read too many books to just pick one good fictional character. So this is a hard one. Oh my goodness. Like, I'm just going to have to go with my gut with the safe bet of Beyonce, because Beyonce's Beyonce, so Beyonce.
Broccoli. I mean, what a loved one's visit would be is Beyonce.
Well, actually, if you keep pressing play there, I think there's a little more to it create an even weirder picture of what this loved one's visit is.
Like, well, but, you know, because she's the safe bet. I think it's like, oh, yeah, here's your loved one, Beyonce. Oh, here's this other person's loved one, Beyonce. Here's one more person's loved one, also Beyonce.
Broccoli. So now what Marianne is proposing is essentially a situation where everyone's loved one is Beyonce.
Wow.
Where it's not just one, that there is apparently a Beyonce clone factory.
Yeah,
situation.
Is there like a Beyonce multiverse where all the Beyoncés are pointing to each other in the GIF? Or is it one Beyonce and it's like she has to like keep running back out?
That'd be interesting as well if it's like quick changes, right? I'm like, all right, now here comes VMA's Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Here comes Super Bowl Beyonce. Mm-hmm. And I would love this idea of, you know, obviously she'd be guaranteed to win the reward. But I guess the better question is like, you know, who is she servicing from that perspective, right? Like, who is she loyal to out of her own loved ones? It's almost like she has her own moment of ultimate honesty of whose loved one is she truly?
Beyonce. You are the loved one. Pick one survivor to go with you on the reward. Like, oh, Jeff, can I take it? Like, no, just one.
Yeah, exactly. Or Jeff makes it even worse and has Beyonce pick everybody but one person. Like, truly, ooh, that is the Destiny's Child right there. They're the ones that are left out. I mean, I think it makes sense for Beyonce, right? Like, Survivor is a song that she made popular, yeah, not by
I'm
herself.
I'm a survivor.
Yeah. Do you think they'd have to bring her out and, like, make her sing it, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be very expensive.
Maybe she's the one who's been singing all of these, like, Welcome to the Jungle or whatever song they put into the 42 previews. Maybe one of the multiverse Beyoncé's.
Maybe. Yeah, that's like, maybe just Beyoncé is like, hey, look, I'm a huge Survivor fan. But, like, look, if my whole team got involved, it would cost a fortune. I'm just going to send you some tracks and you just play them. Don't even say it's me. I just want to be part of the show.
Yeah, just call me, like, Say Beyond or something. Nobody will know who I am secretly. This is my own little... What's Garth Brooks, like, secret identity that he used for a little while? Like, that's Beyonce's version.
Yeah. don't ask. I didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
Chris Gaines.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go back to Marianne.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
Honestly, the best advice that I received was from my friend. And like, what happened is that he was like, just never stop praying. Just make sure that, like, I'm someone who's very religious. And like, the thing is, like, you can go and you can prepare as much as you want to go on the show. But the thing is, it's all based on the people around you and what's happening on the island. So all your preparation can be all for naught. So I think that a thing that's super important is just like, to make sure that I'm always prepared, like in my spiritual side, I'm always praying, just being like, God, give me strength. Make sure that I'm there to see another day. Make sure that I go and make those right decisions to kind of keep me grounded. Because in an island where you can't trust anyone, the only person you can trust is God.
Yeah. How about that, Mike? Survivor, worth praying for.
I mean, there is a non-zero chance she is going to say that. Right out there on the island like that. Come on.
When she goes back, at least. Yeah, she could use
it. Yeah, the merchandising is right there. I mean, look, she is also living in a place where Keith Sowell told God to come on several seasons ago. Mm-hmm. So, like, God is, I feel God in this Applebee's reward today. And so that is Marianne. And, you know, she is certainly not the first person to sort of come in from that perspective as well, right? We even experienced this a bit with Shan last season of, like, you know, I really only have one number one in the game, and it is to, you know, the higher powers that be. And so it's almost this idea that we've had people come in with certain religious aesthetics, and we've seen this sort of work against someone like Coach in South Pacific of, like, you know, you preach all this stuff, you say that you're a man of God, and then you do this. There is this idea of almost ultimate honesty from that perspective as well of, like, you know, I have loyalty to, you know, this one higher power, and that almost gives me my own innermost moral permission to do what I need to do. Obviously, there was a lot of discourse last season about why is Shan doing this? She's a pastor. Do you know the message that she's sending? But I do think from your own innermost psychological level, if you sort of come in with this notion of anything goes, because at the end of the day, I am grounded and devoted to my faith, that does give you, I think, some leniency to do some things in there. Now, will it be received well? I'm not entirely sure, but at least gives Marianne, I think, her own sense of permission to do what she needs to do.
Okay, Mike, anything else about Marianne that you want to highlight?
So we should mention, it was not talked about in her bio or anything, but Marianne does talk about in her bio and in her 1 minute video that her mom is from Kenya. And so she is a first generation immigrant. Again, really nice sense of story of immigration from a lot of these cast members, be they first generation or immigrating in and of themselves. So, yeah, Marianne really just has a very storied, diverse background. I mean, I'm really excited to see her play. Like you said, her personality just jumps off the screen. She did create, in my opinion, one of the first GIF-gifable moments in that 42 preview. I think she has a good shot of making it to the merge, but I'm not sure how everything we discussed is going to gel together when push starts coming to shove and we start to get to those stages that maybe she's making these promises of ultimate honesty.
Yeah, I don't want to get like too like hung up on the strategy going in. I just think that she has the one of the things that I'm always looking for in the Survivor players of just like, do they have sort of like off the charts charisma where that do people like meet this person and instantly love them? And I feel like if you have that, like I feel like the rest of the stuff, I think you can sort itself out. I think that she's in a good landing spot in terms of being like on a tribe that is physical. Like I think that she is very much in danger of going home pre-merge if her tribe goes to a few tribal councils. So if they can survive the pre-merge, I think she's in a great position where if she gets to the merge, she's super likable. She's not going to be seen as somebody who's a threat. You know, can she sort of like lay in the weeds? She mentioned Vesepia, somebody who was under the radar, but then worked to engineer a big flip when it seemed like that she wasn't in the power. And then could Marianne ultimately like get herself in a very favorable position going into sort of, you know, the final six of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to watch her. The three words that she used to describe herself in her bio are energetic, empathetic, and chaotic. And that's a little bit of what I love about some of my favorite Survivor players is that ability to, you know, not get entirely too ugly and too personal, to have the energy that makes us all like jumping alongside with her as she plays a game that she really loves. And then ultimately the chaos. We love to see the chaos. Rob, we love good TV. I feel like no matter how long she lasts, Marianne is going to make good TV. And I think she's going to be somebody to watch no matter what placement she makes this season.
And no matter like how good of a position she gets in, I don't see her ever getting like overconfident and cocky.
No, definitely not. If anything, I see her getting maybe a little too flighty and being like, I feel too comfortable. Almost going back to like what Mr. Matt told Jonathan, right? This idea of like, this doesn't feel good. Her inner Gabby is coming out, much like Gabby herself experienced, right? With going against the Christian of it all and her deciding to say, nope, I think I'm going to turn this game on its head and do something. It might be to her detriment, but I could certainly see that idea happen. I don't think the game is going to be boring with Marianne in it.
Okay.
Suffice it to say.
All right, Mike, we have one last member of the Taku tribe to talk about. You said it the other day, Omar coming, and Omar is here.
Yes, Omar Zahir is here. Let me issue a brief correction before we get into Omar. I had said during our kickoff show that I had believed that Omar was the third Muslim contestant in Survivor history. I was incorrect on that. And thank you to those of you that were able to mention that to me and correct me on it. We know that definitely Nasir is Muslim. Some people have also pointed me, Rob, to a podcast you had done with Reem on 90 Day Fiancé, yes, where I believe she had said that she was Muslim as well. So, I mean, awesome on Survivor that, you know, between seasons 10 and now we've increased like Muslim representation like 400%. So let's count Omar as part of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, excited to hear a little bit more about Omar, the veterinarian.
Yes, it should be very fun. I don't know if he's going to go full, you know, Jan from Survivor Thailand and nurse all these animals back to health. That might take him away from
the
strategy.
Did Jan really nurse any animals back to health, Mike?
Well, she was more the Dr. Kevorkian, right? of like, all right, I'll put this out of its misery.
Yeah, she was more of like the animal like hospice worker or...
I mean, that was also Omar's going to describe his job, and that's not, you know, certainly part of his job as well. So he is both the Jan and the Rupert in that regard. He's the best of both worlds with that dichotomy.
OK. All right, Mike, anything else you want to set up about Omar? He's 31. He is in Whitby, Ontario.
Yeah, a lot of Canadians, I think, were nice to see the representation, but also did point out, hey, Survivor, there is parts of Canada outside of Ontario. I do believe that Drea lives in Montreal, but I'm pretty sure so far, besides that, none of the Canadian Survivor players have not come from that province.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear what Omar has to say.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I'm on Survivor because I'm a huge fan of the show. I've been watching since season one. I listen to all the podcasts, read all the interviews, and I've seen every season at least twice, if not more. And it's been a lifelong dream. And in my life, like, I will go forth and do my dreams. I went to vet school, which is harder to get into than medical school in Canada. I wanted to be an exotic animal specialist. Like, I went to vet school afraid of dogs because I knew I wanted to practice on birds and reptiles and weird things like that. And I was one of the few lucky ones that was able to go off into a specialty for that purpose, which has a very low admission rate of like 4 to 5%. And I still did that. And so Survivor was like the last big dream that I had that I wanted to do. And it's so crazy that even when I was watching as like a little kid, I was like, I know I'm going to be on that show one day. Even though I'm Canadian, I feel like at some point it'll be fine. And so to be here right now is super surreal.
What's your history with Survivor?
I've watched since season one, episode 8. I remember distinctly because my sister had to go to work and she's like, can you tape my show for me on VHS? So I had to watch it because you couldn't tape it and watch a different channel. And I was captivated ever since I saw Greg Buis voted off of the island. He was crying or fake crying, and I thought it was real. And from that moment forward, I was captivated. I watched every season. Some of my favorite players I'm going to emulate out here, like Rob Cesternino, like Suri Fields, like Tyson. I think that those are the people that I'm going to play the game most like. And there's, of course, some least favorites along the way that I'm going to maybe avoid their tactics, such as the Hance family. Not a huge fan of them. I really enjoyed Winners at War, but all of my favorites went home so early that I hope that we can turn this around and make season 42 better, even better.
Broccoli. Okay. All right. First off, so Mike, so close to Omar having a B&B origin story of the Gretchen boot.
I know, but I do find it interesting that Omar's sister asked him to tape the episode. And the very first thing Omar saw of Survivor was Greg Buis making a very weird tape for his own sister.
Oh,
if you remember, I believe that was the same episode.
Sister. Where, yeah.
Yeah. Where, you know, his sister was making noises. And that was the infamous one with Rudy being like, I don't know what the hell's going on. Weird.
Probably,
incest.
Yeah. Incest or something.
So imagine Omar being like, this is what my sister is into. What is this implying? Yeah. But that was Omar's access point. But he gives out an entire laundry list of people that he wants to emulate, much like Marianne, and emphasizes the same things in his bio as well. You know, talks about you, talks about Tyson, talks about Suri. He does
all the greats.
All the greats. I mean, he picks out specific assets. He says Rob Cesternino's strategic prowess. He really understood the power dynamics and when to shift the game, and also made people feel comfortable with humor. He was also able to articulate his game beautifully in confessional.
Oh, thank you.
Suri Fields, her sit, wait, and strike strategy is savage. That is a lot of S's at once. Tyson Apostle, his sass and strategic game, more S's. Kim Spradlin, her social skills were top-notch, and she made an alliance with everyone and wasn't afraid to make moves. And Natalie Anderson for her laser focus. And to be honest, these are some of my favorite answers to the questions of like, which players are you most like? Honestly, Marianne, anyone out there, go ahead and cheat. You know, pick, there are hundreds of people who played Survivor. And the answer is probably going to be more honestly to what these two are giving, right? Of like picking and choosing parts of different people rather than just copying and pasting one in particular. And I feel like we got a lot of insight from Omar as to what he hopes to bring in from all of these people, yourself included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Good answers from Omar. He's put a lot of thought into this. Let's hear what else he has to say.
What's your favorite moment in Survivor history?
One of my favorite moments of Survivor was not one that a lot of people think of right off the bat, but it was when in Survivor Micronesia, not even the Eric giving up his immunity necklace, but it was actually Ozzy getting blindsided. Because I was never a huge Ozzy fan. I didn't really understand why people thought he played a good game. I thought he kind of sucked at the game. He didn't really understand the social dynamics. He put way too much emphasis on challenge performance, and this isn't the Olympics, it's Survivor. And watching a bunch of players like Suri, like a Parvati, come together and cut him off at the knees and get rid of that sense of entitlement when he least expected it is why I want to play the game. It's like you want to go out there, make a big splash when it's the right time, using the right people, and you have to have the perfect combination of winning factors to win. And so I think that moment kind of highlights, you know, a greater purpose for the game.
Broccoli. Do you think CBS should use that slogan that Omar provided when the Winter Olympics finish? It's not the Olympics, it's Survivor.
Sure. The thing that jumps out to me is we have Jackson here in this tribe who loves Ozzy.
Yeah.
Wants to be Ozzy. Here's Omar. I hate Ozzy. You know, no disrespect to Ozzy. Not a fan.
Not an OnlyFans fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so interesting. You know, it felt like I was not really getting a sense of how this tribe is going to go, but I am wondering if sort of we have a little bit of a rift here.
Yeah, and I will also say just objectively, I love Omar's answer. I completely agree with him. I think the Aussie boot in Survivor Micronesia might be one of my favorite Survivor episodes of all time. I think it understandably gets overshadowed with things like the Amanda surprise idol play, obviously Eric giving up the necklace, but man, I just remember being incredibly jazzed up when that episode aired back in 2008. Just an absolute masterclass of like everyone taking out this guy with this idol. It was one of the first times besides James that had really happened in Survivor history, and the way that Ozzy was sort of perceived up to that point. It was just like storybook in how everything played out. You know, Ozzy was built up as the big villain considering he was the big hero in Cook Island. So I really appreciate the answer. And to your point, it does make me wonder, you know, Jonathan really sticks out as the Aussie type out of this, not only tribe, but the entire cast. Is Omar going to have those blinders on and just key in on that and say, this is somebody who I can't work with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is he the Suri to Jackson's Aussie?
Very true. Very
Jonathan's
true.
Aussie. Jonathan's Aussie. Okay. All right. Let's hear what else Omar has to say.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
I think one that's on an everyday basis is just being a veterinarian, because you see people in all sorts of states. Some are happy. They're coming in for a wellness exam and they're just excited to share their pet with you. Other people are in the devastating moment where they know their pet can no longer survive and you have to actually put them down and, you know, put them out of their misery and give them some peace and everything in between. You have people also who don't want to do any diagnostics. You have people that want to do everything, even when it's not reasonable. And you kind of have to take your opinion and your advocacy for the animal, but then meet whoever you're seeing on an everyday basis where they are. And that skill is going to come in super useful on Survivor because everybody's different. Everybody has different likes, dislikes, interests, things that make them tick, things that make them calmer, and you have to go identify where they are and meet them rather than have them meet you where you are. So it's being adaptable, being moldable. The other side of things, it's going to be a really tough experience. It's like one of the worst things that you could ever go through is like deprivation and being uncomfortable, taken out of your normal life and being in a very uncomfortable situation. I've never been camping before. I've never slept outside. I've never even slept in a tent. And so this is going to be a really challenging experience that pushes me to the extreme, but I know that I'll be able to get through it because I watched my dad unfortunately pass away a couple of years ago in the hospital where he was suffering from pulmonary fibrosis, and every breath that he took, every single in and out, something that we take for granted every day, was excruciating. It was so difficult. And watching him go through that, trying so hard to survive, I know that I can draw on that strength and do anything myself.
Broccoli. All right. So once again, a lot to get in there. A lot of directions that he went into. I want to start with the occupational experience, because Rob, I think this was really interestingly vocalized compared to, you know, I think some other medical professionals who have been on the show so far. Let's go as recently as Voce, right, who talks about, you know, he is in a very different position as a surgeon in that I don't know how much interaction with patients he was doing. As opposed to Omar, like, it's a very service-based interaction that obviously his patients cannot necessarily talk back to him. But I think he vocalized really nicely this idea of, based on what you need to do, you know, the fact that you are talking to this pet's owner, you kind of have to meet them where they are rather than sort of like convincing them to meet you where you are.
Yeah. Since you invoked Voce, yeah, I kind of feel like that. And again, I'm not, this is not my area of expertise, but I kind of feel like it's like, okay, all right, we are going to operate on your brain. It's like, okay, you have my attention. Okay. I'm not like, I don't know. Can we go kind of like cheap on this? I'm not sure if we want to I don't know, but I feel like that, right. With, the veterinarian, I feel like that there's a little bit more of, I don't want to say negotiating, but I kind of feel like you might have to talk people into certain things that maybe they might not be like, wait, I just came in to get the nails clipped.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of like, almost secondhand social relationships, right? In that, again, you are not liaising with the patient themselves. You're not going to be like, all right, let me convince you to go on this medication. Instead, it's almost like you're talking with the loved one of the patient. And that can certainly happen with doctors as well, right? You know, in really tragic situations of, you know, can you make this decision on behalf of my patient? In this case, you're talking to someone who, while they obviously love their pets, you know, they might make a decision that is more divorced from, you know, certain emotions or more sort of reflective of other emotions than maybe a human medical profession. And so I do think that's an interesting discrepancy. I mean, from my memory, Rob, I'm pretty sure this is the first veterinarian we have had on American Survivor in general. And so I do think it's an interesting distinction of like the role the human plays in both of those different occupations.
What's it like being the human in a human pet relationship?
The thing about the being the human in the human pet relationship is that neither one of you is the pet.
Well, I think the pets are.
Well, one of you is, yeah. I guess, suppose the pet
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Omar.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
I think that people will perceive me in the game as maybe like a friendly, nice, goofy, self-deprecating person. Somebody who's maybe not thinking of the game, maybe is more preoccupied with the fruit bats in the trees or the birds on the beach. Someone who's deeply passionate about animals and their care. And maybe they'll forget that I'm also playing the game. And, you know, I'm not afraid to make moves. I'm not afraid to make alliances. I'm not afraid to lie, cheat, steal, whatever it may be in order to win. And so I'm hoping that I kind of have this disguise as maybe like a harmless bird, like a pigeon who's like cute, voluptuous, nice, kind of dumb, so people think. But really, I want to play this game like almost like a predatory bird, like an owl who hunts in the night, but you can't hear or see it coming until you're dead or Jeff is snuffing your torch.
Broccoli.
Okay. Yeah, so this is another thing, you know. The two things I think I've seen a lot in this preseason is Marianne doing it for the weird kids and Omar's play like a pigeon or seem like a pigeon, play like an owl metaphor.
Yeah. Did he describe a pigeon as voluptuous?
Yeah, I mean, that's a thick ass bird, right? Two C's for coo coo. Please don't clip that out. Please don't clip that out.
I don't know where to go from here.
No, it's an interesting metaphor from Omar going with the pigeon specifically. I don't know.
He loves pigeons.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I live in the tri-state area. Pigeons, I do not necessarily think of as like dumb or, you know, innocent. Pigeons are actually rather, I don't know, risk-taking in New York.
You know, so that I feel like I'm saying he loves pigeons, but then he's also describing a pigeon as like, oh, I want people to think I'm just a simple pigeon. So he's kind of like giving pigeons like a backhanded compliment. Like, oh, yeah, they're voluptuous, but nobody thinks much of them. Not much going on upstairs, if you know what I mean, with these pigeons.
Yeah. I've got all these dumb pigeon jokes that I can pull out.
But I'm actually going to play the game like an owl. I came into the game playing like a pigeon, but now I'm playing like an owl. But in his pet peeves, Mike, his pet peeves are people who complain about the cost of vet care. Do they have universal vet care in Canada?
I think it only applies to humans, only to unfortunately, humans. That's, a bit of animal discrimination.
You know, the difference between the human pet relationship is that only one of you has universal health care.
So don't get injured, Fido, when you're doing this challenge alongside your owner.
Yes, yes. In America, we're equals with our pets. Neither of us have guaranteed health care.
Yeah, that's why people can race with their dogs. I'll love the Amazing Race 33.
Yes. So, all right. Rudeness. Mm-hmm. Feeding seeds to parrots. I guess that's a no-no.
Well, is it like feeding rice to maybe pigeons as well, right? Like that's a myth that has been set up, and it actually puts a lot of health scares on them. Maybe this is like Omar having very specific experiences where he's had to, you know, pump the stomachs of some parrots as of late.
Okay. Jim Grunters, Joey from Friends.
Yeah. Can we focus in on that for a second? What has Matt LeBlanc done to wrong Omar here?
I don't know.
Like of all the characters, Joey from friends, that's like I have seen a think piece every other day about how much Ross is
Ross
apparently
from
like
friends. Totally get it.
Like real Russell Hans of friends. But I feel like Joey's rather innocuous. Like, yes, there's the whole awkward thing that happened with Rachel, but I don't blame Joey for that necessarily.
Okay. The fact that mini wheats have gelatin, I suspect that that's a food restriction, that he would like to eat mini wheats but can't because they have gelatin.
Or is it more of like an inhumanity thing of maybe he cares for the cows and he doesn't want gelatin to be involved in the production of his favorite cereal?
I don't know. Maybe we can find that out. If I had to guess, I would think that he it's a food restriction because he talks about like all of the other restrictions that he puts on himself from maintaining Muslim values, including pork.
That is very true. Yeah. As well, we know that he is of Indian descent as well.
Yeah. When people talk bad about pigeons, that's why I brought this up. So don't talk bad about pigeons, but he wants people to think he's just a humble pigeon.
Now, did Joey from Friends have some sort of storylines with a pigeon? Is that why they have
Bert
beef?
From Sesame Street collected pigeons.
And Joey is more of an Ernie than a Bert. So maybe he's just like connecting A to C there. It actually also, did. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, feeding seeds to parrots and talking bad about pigeons. I think that we've actually gotten some literal pet peeves here with Omar. Yeah.
I think Omar maybe took things a little too literally, or maybe, the last one that he said was institutional racism, which feels like a bit of low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I hate when people hate people. That's really sucks. Look, yes, obviously.
I hope that these are not like in any particular order.
Yeah, and I also hope that he didn't mix up like this with three words to describe you either. I would like to hope that people out there all have the pet peeves of like sexism and racism and homophobia. Mm-hmm. I would hope that's just a given, but I guess good on Omar for covering his bases. Mm-hmm. I did realize something, Rob.
Yes.
Could there be a little bit of a disguise here? And I'm not talking about the pigeon.
Pigeon veneer. Disguise, yeah.
Could it be Omar Sia Zahir? Could Omar really be jockeying for the Sia money right now? Yeah. I'm gonna project myself as the one who loves animals.
Mike, I think Sia has her own stuff going on right now. I don't know. Maybe not at the time of filming Survivor 41.
I feel like Sia has been a little absent since Survivor 39.
Yeah, it's almost like she has some things going on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she has her own sort of pet peeves that she needs to take care of in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I think if Omar is trying to do that, that's a bit of a dry well to pull water out of. But I just found it very interesting.
Great pet peeves from Omar. Okay, let's hear more from Omar.
What's something that other players might dislike about you?
I think that the other players are going to dislike that I know nothing about survival. Like, I literally have no idea. I'm going to, not have anything to contribute shelter wise. I may have a harder time making a fire than other people, although they may not hate that. I'm going to hate the bugs. I'm going to hate the heat. And they might think that I'm generally useless, but I do try very hard. And so I think that, I can maybe make up for that through effort. And I do learn pretty quickly. So I'm hoping somebody can show me the way and then I'll follow in that respect of the game.
What's the best advice you received before coming out to play?
The best advice that I received before coming out here was don't be annoying. Because sometimes with my family, I can pester and tease them and annoy them just for fun. But I also know that I have a good enough relationship with them where I can do that. And I also feel that I have pretty good self-awareness. Like, I know when I'm being too much, I need to rein it back in. I know when I need to give a little bit more because maybe I'm being too shy or reserved. And I know when other people are annoyed or they like what I'm giving them because, growing up, I was very, very shy. Like, I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to make friends necessarily. Like, I could make friends, but I never really let them in. And in order to kind of get by on a day-to-day basis, I would observe other people's interactions and, really focus in on what people liked and didn't like about other people so that I could apply it to myself so that other people would like me more. So I think that, growing up being a little bit more insecure in that sense has kind of matured me in that way to really try to read social cues very well. And now that I'm secure with who I am, I think having that background will help propel me further in the game.
Okay. Boy, I think Omar is going to be a very interesting player to watch this season.
Yeah, so I could understand why his entire statement of like, I am up a creek without a paddle and I don't even know how to paddle when it comes to the outdoors would be a huge red flag. But I think Omar got a very lucky draw with this Taku tribe in many ways, and that I could think of maybe at least half of this tribe that is honestly in the same boat as him.
Yeah, so just as we are bringing in like the rest of the tribe here, talking with Omar, like I really could see a scenario where I wonder if there could be a tribe division here where I wonder if Omar, we talked about, okay, well, I could see Jackson and Mariah sort of bonding. I kind of feel like that. Boy, I bet Marianne would get along great with them. I wonder if Omar could be the person that sort of unites, okay, all right, we are sort of like the people who are not like the physical people in this group where, but we outnumber Jack, Jonathan and Lindsay. And could this tribe potentially, like, if they're rolling for a little while, could they throw a challenge to get out a Jonathan before they get into the merge if it's not a fit?
Yeah, I mean, this could be team the Meek Shall Inherit, right? But, I mean, see this a couple of times. Survivor Karamoan's another example of, you know, there are the people that are prototypically set up to do well in the game, much like we talked about with Jonathan and Lindsay, right? That if they get to a certain perspective, like they could, they're suited up to do very well in the physical portion, but they may be outnumbered. So if they do get a sense of, you know, if everyone's able to get their heads around this idea of, yeah, they're helpful, but we can outnumber them. We have the numbers. So, you know, immunity challenges be damned. It could be a good opportunity.
Or, you know, we saw Lindsay as kind of like a leader in this group, but I kind of wonder if, you know, and I feel like that Lindsay and Jonathan are going to be aligned, but it's like, okay, well, what if we vote out Lindsay and keep Jonathan and basically tell him like, hey, you know, keep winning the challenges for us if you want to stick around.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, we've got a pink slip in reserve for you for the one time you slip up. So you better like go beast mode in all these challenges. I mean, that would be hardcore, but it'd be a hell of a way to sort of keep someone in your conscription to do well at these challenges.
I mean, he's incentivized to win, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I know I asked this last time, and I guess we'll sort of move the question up the line here of like, who do you think is going to be one of the tightest twosomes in this tribe? I already have one, and I cheated a little bit because it was sort of shown in a reaction clip in the teaser proper, but I am all in on Omar and Marianne. I even have a name for them. Omarianne is here, and they are ready to take on the game.
Yeah, I think that's a little too close to Omicron for my taste, Mike.
I mean, listen, it's top of mind, so let's you know, make the name deserve some good branding here. So I'm all in on Omarianne.
It's a great portmanteau. They are the Canadians. They are super fans. You know, you totally could see them working together. And then if you have that's a pair, and Mariah and Jackson potentially are a pair. Also, Omar and Marianne. While Omar is a veterinarian, you have Mariah who is a nurse, and it's not necessarily, you know, apples and apples, but, you know, it's both, you know, similar, working in a medical field. So I feel like that they probably, you know, have, you know, some commonalities to be able to talk about, and maybe you look at the world through, you know, a similar worldview. So I really feel like that those three certainly, I think, are going to be able to get along very well. And then I feel like that Jackson, I feel like, feels like more of a fit with them than with Lindsay and Jonathan.
I'm getting a lot of David Wright vibes from Omar for obvious reasons, right? We saw firsthand from David, I mean, covering his ears when the hammer was being used in on day one. Like, Omar very much gives those vibes up. I've never been outside. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm willing to learn. And we saw the arc that David had in both of those seasons. He was able to make it to the post-merge. And I could see that here as well, where, yes, on the one hand, it is a smaller tribe, so there are less places to hide. But at the same time, like, I don't know if they're going to get another Savvy or Sweat challenge on the very first day. But if there is one, Omar could use that opportunity to really ingratiate himself socially with people, play up that goofy pigeon persona, as he mentions, where even if he is somebody who feels a bit out of his element, A, it will help that they have people like Mariah and Marianne, who are also similarly self-professed out of their element in the game or in the camp life of it all. But B, someone that's like, ah, it's fine. He's someone that we really get along with, someone that I can really trust. And again, in this hyper-focused modern-day version of Survivor, someone you can trust probably still beats someone who can win you challenges even in the pre-merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was as defined by Shannon Gus when we previewed The Edge of Extinction. That was like the David Wright ethos of Survivor, of it's the people I trust versus the people I don't trust.
Yeah, and so it's become that simple in the game of Survivor, even as the game becomes more complicated. And so, again, while I think that overall, I know we still have more to get to with Omar, but I feel like there are some indicators with like any other player might stick out as, okay, Omar's a guaranteed pre-merge boot. For whatever reason, I'm not getting that vibe from him personally.
Yeah, I feel like that he has, you know, a self-confidence and I feel like is going to be able to, you know, navigate the, you know, whatever survival issues. Like, give me a person that knows what they're doing in the game and they'll figure out the survival stuff. Like, give me a person who knows the survival stuff and they don't know the game. I'm not feeling too great about that person.
Right, because at the end of the day, you know, that survival stuff might come in handy on what, the first day and the last day in terms of the fire making challenge, but every day in between, it might help. But I think there's a bit of a shift in, you know, what takes more focus, the game or the outdoors.
Okay. Mike, what else do you have about Omar?
Yeah, so you mentioned, obviously, the pet peeves were a big thing. So here's some other fun quirks about Omar. What is something we would never know from looking at you? He goes into this story. He talks about losing his dad a couple years ago, but he grew up with very little money, living off my mom's disability support. There were times where our lights were cut, we were evicted, and there was little money for food. Given that level of instability, people would be surprised to realize how far I've been able to come, which is fantastic. You know, great story of adversity. He finishes the section by saying, also, I'm afraid of condiments.
Condiments.
Condiments. Yes. People who know Jemmy from the challenge will know that some people are afraid of ketchup, Rob.
Because it looks like blood?
I don't know. I'm not Tori. I have not done the psychological study.
All
as to why
condiments.
People...
Mustard, too?
I don't know if he has a type, right? Like, I guess if you have to pick your literal poison, if, you know, Omar gets a trip to the Survivor
mayo,
hot dog bar.
I get it. Is mayo a condiment?
I think so. Is mayo, in your opinion, the most deadly condiment?
I don't know if it's deadly, but I feel like it's kind of gross.
If someone shady meets you in an alley, holds their coat open, and flashes a bunch of condiments, which are you flinching in front of the most?
I mean, I feel like that barbecue sauce is pretty harmless.
Yeah, I mean, it's tangy. I guess I'm thinking of something that will, like, I don't know.
It does
know,
go well on a lot of pork, so maybe that it's not as useful if you're not eating pork.
Well, that's a good point. I think if someone is showing me condiments, I have the implication that they are going to try to eat me, not that they are going to try to harm me in any way with said
condiments. If somebody shows you condiments, you think that they're trying to eat you.
Well, I think if someone's approaching me, you know, menacingly, right, with like, you know, holding a knife in one hand and like a packet of relish in the other hand, I'm like, I think that dude's going to eat me right now.
You're not doing a lot of grilling in the summer, Mike?
I mean, I think it's a very good assumption to think that I am not.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess that's a future warning for if and when we have live events in the future. Nobody approach me with weaponry and condiments or I will make a lot of connections there.
What if there was somebody who was wearing like the white chef's hat?
I mean,
would that be a signal to you that it was like a safe space? You didn't have to worry that you were going to be thrown on the barbecue and then had condiments served on you?
That depends. What does the apron say? You know, does it say to serve man? Mm-hmm. Because then my brain's really going to jump to my own neuroses plays. But if it's like kiss the cook, actually, if it says kiss the cook, then I might feel even weirder about it because then there's just a lot of mixed messaging going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I personally, like, I think that it would be a little like low class to be serving like a lot of condiments with, like, if you were eating a person, like, I feel like that would be very insulting to the person, I would think.
Well, I mean, to the person, especially as an insult to injury of like, you go through the harm of eating me and you drown me in ketchup like some well-done $2 steak. How dare you?
Right.
I'm prime rib at best.
Pass the A1 for this guy.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing as well is, you know, Omar has an affinity towards animals in his role as a veterinarian. Could it be he's sensitive to when people use condiments in response to, you know, eating animals, considering the day-to-day that he plays with them.
He loves parrots, loves pigeons, so it's all possible. Okay. All right. Do you think we made enough people annoyed with this segment yet, or keep going?
I don't know. Yeah, I think
let's
maybe
get out. Let's get out while we still have a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. I think people might turn it off after Thick Ass Bird. For those of you that are sticking around, I'm hoping that the condiment, you know, cannibalism talk really kept you on board.
Anything else about the Taku tribe?
No. So, I mean, let's go into a couple of these questions that I asked before. So I gave my own proposal of like the tight twosome, the Shannon Ricard that might come out of this in Omarion. What about you, Rob? What do you think? You sort of alluded to the dynamics beforehand, but is there like a top tight two in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I see Jonathan and Lindsay as a pair. I feel like that Omar and Marianne are going to be a pair. I think that then we'll see then Mariah and Jackson end up being a pair. And I feel like that Mariah and Jackson, I think, more gravitate towards Omar and Marianne. And I think that that is potentially, you know, a group of four. And, you know, somebody's going to go. So I think it's going to be Jonathan or Lindsay who's outnumbered.
Yeah, let me correct myself. Before the break, I'd said that Jackson and Mariah are the only parents. I don't believe Jackson is a parent, but they are the two oldest tribe members, considerably so. So I still think it makes sense that they sort of like look across, you know, the aisle at each other. So to that point, make a hot take here. Who is going to be the first boot from the Taku tribe if they go to tribal council pre-merge?
I will say that it is going to be Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. So you're going along with this sort of idea of Jonathan and Lindsay are on the outs, but Jonathan is the big challenge
guy.
But
we need Jonathan. Lindsay, yeah, Lindsay is the threat. Lindsay could make alliances like Jonathan, you know, he'll be targeted at the merge. Like even if we get to the merge, he'll be a meat shield. They'll vote him out before they vote us out.
Yeah, okay, so we decide to spare Jonathan and spurn Lindsay. We're cutting her out of the survivor diet from this perspective. Let me go
No BS.
I will say, see, I'm feeling your dynamic with the three pairs, which is always really interesting, right? Because then it's just, okay, which pair is in the middle? I'm actually going to go with, I'll go with Jackson, actually, because I still think Jackson is somebody who's a bit hard to pin down. He himself says that he might be someone who might be perceived as someone hard to pin down just because he is a bit quieter and more to himself in those first few days. Yeah. I could see a situation where, like you said, Lindsay and Jonathan might receive more of the target. But I feel like if we do have this Omar-Marianne pair, they might be a little chaotic and very strategic and a bit overthinking to be like, okay, I'm not sure if we can really work with someone like Jackson down the line. Mariah, I know, is someone we can pull over. Not sure about Jackson. So then maybe they approach like a Jonathan and a Lindsay of, all right, let's just take out Jackson right now. And then maybe the goal would be try to, whoever's going to win over Mariah is going to win the day out.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mike, Taku tribe, very interesting.
Really interesting. So yeah, I mean, again, as I said at the very beginning of all this, this might all be for naught. That this is a tribe that Luvu's it, that barely even touches their torches for the first half of the game. But I think there's a lot of really interesting dynamics. I love the idea that you've sort of sussed out three pairs that could come out. This might completely go the entire opposite way, but
yeah,
I do feel like we really have a lot of wide range of personalities from, you know, those that feel completely out of their element, but like really into the game. And those that are like, oh yeah, Survivor is made for me. Like I'm ready to live out here for, you know, 260 days, let alone 26, but might end up being in the minority with that attitude.
Okay. All right, Mike, I know that you are very busy with everything going on. Can you share with us some of your voluptuous notices about your upcoming projects?
I cannot think of a better word to describe my plug segments than voluptuous, personally. Just feels very on brand. So, yeah, as I mentioned before, every day, two interviews done with the cast. There is some crossover. You might hear some similar answers in the written articles as you do on this podcast here, but there are some discrepancies, particularly that question we heard a couple times this podcast of what celebrity or fictional character would be your loved one. So that's all at parade.com, parade.com/tag/survivor for the whole repository of that. At the time people are listening to this, all of my interviews with the Taku tribe, the ones that we just listened to, will be out. And then over the course of the next few days before we get back again, I'm going to be releasing the Ika tribe, however you want to say it, that we covered last week.
We know how we want to say it.
Yeah. So all 18 contestants will be represented in written form by the time you and I come back together next week. Of course, covering Celebrity Big Brother as well. Everyone who is leaving the house as we are sort of like rapidly accelerating into, you know, Rob, I think that by the time that this, the Ika tribe or the, sorry, the Vati tribe is released next week, you know, we'll be reaching the finale of Celebrity Big Brother. So we are really going into overtime, going into OT with this OTT season. So a lot of interviews coming out there. Mm-hmm. Of course, Amazing Race. We are encroaching on the finale there as well. So I'm doing exit press for parade.com there. And then over on Post Show Recaps, usual stuff, Lost, The Witcher, The Legend of Vox Machina, The X-Files. Angela Blumen actually and I actually did a fun little impromptu podcast where during the Super Bowl, there was a big trailer, wow, the first ever footage for The Lord of the Rings, colon, The Rings of Power.
Relationship goals.
I mean, I put a ring on her and now we're talking about The Rings of Power all these years later. Angela is, if you didn't check out, we did some Lord of the Rings coverage last year. She is a Lord of the Rings super duper fan. And so she is super excited for The Rings of Power, which is Amazon's big Lord of the Rings series that is coming out September 2nd. Since we saw the first trailer footage, we did like a 40-minute podcast, essentially like breaking down everything we know about the series so far. A lot more has come to light with a big Vanity Fair expose that came out this past week. And so we talked through what we know so far, gave our reactions. So if you're into that, be sure to check that out. And I'm sure there is much more random bits and pieces that people can hopefully gobble up like parrots with seeds. But please don't feed seeds to your parrots. But please, I'm feeding my content to you and you can gobble that up all pimped out at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you again for all your hard work putting this together. This is so much fun to get to do with you. And I hope that the listeners enjoy getting to hear these because it's so much fun for me to get together. I'm sad we only have one left.
I know. So last up is the Vati tribe. And yeah, the interesting dynamics do not end here. We are finishing off with Chanel, Daniel, Hi, Jenny, Lydia, and Mike. And I think we'll be able to then round out the entire cast, get a sense as to what these tribe dynamics are going to be like as well. And then, Rob, by that point, we're only a couple weeks away from March 9th. You know, the date is quickly approaching us, and I'm excited to actually see what these players are able to do once their feet hit the beach.
All right. Well, Mike, great work once again. We are going to have one more of these tribe previews coming up 1 week from now. So look for that coming up next Wednesday. Make sure you subscribe to Rob as a podcast, robhasawebsite.com/subscribe to make sure that you are ready to go. Of course, we have all of our Survivor coverage coming your way. We will have more as we get closer to the start of Survivor 42. So happy to have you here with us. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.